Welcome one and all to the 2007 Fall Guide Dog Users of California Morning Program. Thank you. I had plenty of coffee, but didn't quite make up for the sleep deprivation here. So we will get started now. I'm Ann Kaiser, your president, and we will make introductions, a few of us that are here. We'll start to my right. I don't know if we want to... We have one wireless microphone here, uh-huh. And we'll just, for the sake of the recordings, something I need to remind everyone, because of the way this is being recorded and for archiving on the Internet, if a person does not speak directly into a microphone, they will not be heard on the recording. So if you want to participate as an audience member, you will have to use a microphone. So anyone who wishes to speak, I will somehow get this passed around. So, all right. So we'll start to my right.
Jerry Arakawa, VP.
And this is Mary Beth Randall, Treasurer.
Oh, hi. This is Pam Metz.
Cindy Flerman.
Right.
Abby Vincent.
Oh, yes, Abby. Hi. Bill Gillespie. I have calendars with me for sale if you'd like one. They benefit our Redwood Empire chapter. Thank you.
Jerry Wilson from San Diego chapter.
Lynn Coates, no chapter yet.
Okay. We'll have to find you a chapter.
It's Becky Barnes, First Vice President GDY and Guide Dog Users of New York. I'm a little jet-lagged.
Teresa Stockton, San Diego chapter, and my husband Mark Stockton from San Diego chapter.
Very good. Welcome.
All right. I think that's it right now. Yes, that's everybody in.
Very good. Thanks, Mary Beth. Yeah, we can do, I forgot to say introduce your dogs and stuff too, but we can do that again at the lunch thing because we always have a lot of people and we also have several microphone runners, so it makes things a little bit easier. So we can do this once again at the lunch program. All right. First thing I want to do is congratulate two of my officers, Vice President Jerry Arakawa and Treasurer Mary Beth Randall, who have just come home from training with successor guides, and both of them are just absolutely stellar here at this convention. I'm really impressed at how well they're both dogs are doing, and it reflects on the handlers, obviously. So good job, you guys. It's very, very good. So without further ado, I'm going to read the minutes from the 2007 Spring Convention business meeting. Our secretary is not here right now because he is the acting chair of the Resolutions Committee, and they are in session right now. So who knows when we'll see Mr. Metz. So in his absence, I will read the minutes here. GDUC Spring 2007 Business Meeting. The meeting was called to order at approximately 8:40 p.m. 8 a.m. Good heavens. Okay. 8:40 a.m. by President Ann Kaiser. I didn't exactly have a chance to really verify what time it was, but it seems to me it was around 8:40, 8:45. The full complement of officers and directors were present. The minutes from the fall business meeting were read by Secretary Ken Metz. The minutes were approved as read. The Treasurer's report was then presented by Treasurer Mary Beth Randall. Ending balance in the GDUC checking account is $4,175.70. The report was approved unanimously. Mary Beth then informed us that we have a $50 credit with GDUC because we had actually paid them too much in dues. Okay, committee reports. The Constitution and Bylaws Committee met over breakfast Thursday morning and came up with the following revisions presented by Mary Beth. Okay, in the Constitution, Article 4. And actually, this is of both Constitution and Bylaws, as it says. Officers, proposed new position on the GDUC board to be a membership chair. Article 5. Of the Constitution, resignation or removal of an officer. This amendment would allow members to vote on proposed removal via email with return receipt as an alternative. Article 6, meetings. In the event that the president calls for a special meeting, email will be added as a form of notification to members of the board as well as telephone and regular mail. And I have a little note here that in actuality, email has all but replaced regular mail for this purpose. Bylaws. Article 3, Standing Committees. Proposed combining the legislative and advocacy committees into one committee, as it was felt that this would make for a much more efficient unit, as they often work together closely. Article 6, Convention Delegates. Proposed change would be to elect state delegates in the fall, along with board members and officers. I'm trying to... Staple is sort of in my way. I can't read the first part of this page. This would provide more consistency in the election process. Delegates to the national convention would continue to be elected at the spring convention. We will be holding a one-time election for delegate and alternate delegate at this meeting to serve at the upcoming fall convention only. Article 7 officially adds email as a media preference for all publications. No, that's it. Okay. Returning to the Constitution, we proposed inserting an article providing for the formation of local GDUC chapters. Such local chapters would consist of at least 5 individuals and would need to be chartered by the GDUC Board of Directors. They would be allowed to use either the GDUC Constitution and bylaws or those of the Guide Dogs for the Blind Alumni Association as an example. Further details will be... Wait, there's a typo here. Further details will be worked out as chapters take shape. This would be designated Article 3, and subsequent articles would be moved down one number. A motion was made by Jerry Arakawa to adopt the proposed bylaw combining the legislative and advocacy committee into one standing committee. The motion passed with one abstention. A motion was made and seconded to adopt the bylaw providing for a one-time election of delegates for the fall convention and subsequent elections for state delegates to take place in the fall. This passed unanimously. The proposed bylaw change to make email an official format choice for both publications and meeting notifications also passed with no opposition. All these changes will be submitted to the next issue of Forward and will be made available to those requesting them in their preferred format. And I made a little note here. I must also note here that throughout Mary Beth's reading of and further discussion of the bylaws, only those speaking directly into microphones could be heard at all. Therefore, it was impossible to record much in the way of audience participation. Okay. Fundraising. Ken reported that there are still plenty of the polo shirts and the Dear Kilroy books in both hard copy and CD available for sale, as well as tickets for our 50-50 drawing. Jerry Wilson from the San Diego chapter has kindly offered to split the proceeds from the sale of several beautiful needlepoint wall hangings with GDUC and his chapter. Any remaining ones will be sold at the fall convention in Los Angeles. Within a few weeks, a fundraising committee will meet in teleconference to look into purchasing some new products to sell at the exhibit table at the fall convention. We then agreed to use some of our remaining merchandise as door prizes and as tokens of appreciation for all the volunteer time and effort the puppy raisers have historically contributed in order to help GDUC. Legislative advocacy. I can't see that word today. Something wrong with my lips. Okay. CCB Governmental Affairs Director Dan and GDUC member Dan Kaiser then read a draft of a resolution to be brought before the Sunday morning business meeting. In short, this resolution seeks to strike the terms rescue dog and minimal protection dog from the state of California's access code regarding service animals. Section 54.1, Roman numeral 3, E, subsection E. Shirley then sought clarification as to the probability of a search and rescue dog being denied access to accompany his or her handler on a flight to a location where a disaster may have occurred. Dan assured all of us that such trained dogs indeed may accompany their handlers to any emergency site. It was moved and seconded to approve the resolution to go before the committee. The motion carried. This resolution will, if passed by the general membership, become an integral part of Senate Bill 905, by Senator George Runner, the purpose of which will be to deny emotional support animals and their owners the same access rights we as guide dog handlers have fought so hard for and continue to enjoy. Publications Committee. Committee Chair Lee Morton informed us that sometime after the ACB National Convention, her committee will meet via teleconference to start working on a new GDUC brochure. Shirley then mentioned that, for the sake of clarification, our logo should contain more than the acronym GDUC, but rather the actual words for which it stands. One nation under God. The committee will be seeking a graphic artist who will be willing to help in this endeavor at little or no cost. Jerry suggested, or how I assume, suggested asking the three California guide dog schools who they used to do their graphics. It was moved and seconded that the publications committee go forward with this project. The motion passed unanimously. Last but not least were the elections for state and national delegates. Pam Metz was nominated by Alice Chavez to serve as delegate for the fall convention and won by acclamation. I guess so. Shirley Manning was nominated by Ken Metz to serve as alternate delegate but declined the nomination. Nancy Unger was then nominated and won by acclamation. And unfortunately, she's not with us because she's currently training with a new guide dog. Mary Beth Randall was elected by acclamation as delegate for the GDUI National Convention, and Lee Morton was elected as alternate delegate. They will do a great job. The meeting was adjourned at approximately 10 a.m. Respectfully submitted, whoever. I guess I did it in this case, though. Ann Kaiser. Is there any further discussion, deletions, corrections, etc.? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Very good. Yes. Pam.
When were these minutes? I mean, when was this meeting? Was this April, or was this April meeting?
This was the April meeting.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, thanks. That's all I wanted
to know. Anybody else?
Treasurer's report. The lovely and talented Mary Beth Randall. Take it away.
This is Mary Beth Randall. And our balance as of the April 2007 spring convention was $4,115.70. Since that convention, we have had income of $427. Some of that was some new dues, as well as money that we made from fundraising at the spring convention. We have then had, so our total after that was $4,542.70. We then had expenses of $2,488.64. And many of these expenses were for our new fundraising products and for dress labels and things like that for our membership, renewal type stuff. And without looking, I'd have to look at the specific. Expenses taken out of our account because we're under $4,000, $10 fees for the last several months. And so now our current balance, and this is as of just Tuesday, is $2,044.06. And so it is now time to renew dues. So I hope that everybody will get their dues paid up and all of that good stuff, and definitely go out and buy some of our merchandise. And it's great stuff. And that is my report.
Great. Thanks, Mary Beth. Are there any corrections or... National
yes,
delegates.
That's correct.
Fees.
Some of that money was also for our delegates to go to national convention. And that was the question, was about some of the money being for delegates.
Yeah.
And yes, that's correct.
Great. Good point, Lee. All right. Any other discussion? Okay. Is there a move to accept the...
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent.
For the minutes, Dan Kaiser moved, and who seconded it?
Jerry.
I did.
And Jerry seconded it.
All right, very good. Well, while we're on the subject, let's go ahead and talk about fundraising there, Mary Beth. Tell everybody what we have and what they all can't live without. All our lovely products we have.
Okay. Well, let's see. We have wonderful new T-shirts. They are...
I'm wearing one now.
They are 50% cotton, 50% polyester, so they will be washable without too much shrinking. They are white with blue lettering on the front above our pocket, which is now on the shirts. We got shirts with pockets. It has our paw print with GVUC. And on the back of the shirt, we have our In Dog We Trust back. And then underneath it, it says Guide Dog Users of California. And that is all in a navy blue. And it's a very lovely shirt. And quite comfortable. Very, very comfortable. So definitely go out there and get those. If you can buy just a shirt, they're $10. Then we have travel mugs. They are double insulated mugs. And on the mugs, they have our paw print that says GDUC. Did we have them put Guide Dog Users of California? No. We just have the GDUC and the mug. And they have a nice lid. They are 16 ounces. And the mugs by themselves sell for $6. And if you would like to get a mug and a shirt together, you can get a dollar off and pay only $15 for the two items. And the mugs are a silver color, and the paw print is navy blue, just like on the T-shirts.
No,
they are not microwave because they are that metal kind of stuff.
Yeah, they have like a stainless steel core, but it's part of the insulation thing, so I wouldn't recommend microwaving them, but they're... Apparently, I haven't used one yet, but they'll keep whatever hot or cold for a long time because they're double insulated. Yeah. You slide it right into the cup holder or the whatever, and they're very cool.
And the lids are wonderful because the sip portion closes so that if it tips over, it won't spill. And they're very nice mugs. They're heavy feeling, but they are excellent mugs. I have to use mine still. I'd like to use mine. I already bought it. So
I believe they're going pretty fast. I think they're going pretty fast, by the way.
Yeah, they seem to be going fast. So if you want a mug, you better get out there and buy one. The other thing that we have going, again, from our spring convention, it was very popular, was our 50-50 raffle. And so you can get one ticket for $1 or five tickets or six tickets for $5. Is that right?
Yeah.
Six tickets for $5. We will be drawing those tickets tonight. There we go. We're getting a little feedback. Okay. We will be drawing that ticket tonight at the banquet. And so if you go to the booth to purchase your ticket, have them put your name and telephone number on the ticket. We have our wonderful puppy raisers from the Southeast, is that correct?
Southwest.
Southwest Puppy Raising Club. And so they will be happy to assist you with all that. And so definitely go out there and get some 50-50 tickets.
Exactly.
That's right. The more you buy, the more you can win.
Now, I'm going to just insert here real quick that we decided to draw it at the banquet rather than the lunch because it was pointed out by one of the lovely puppy raiser folks that a lot of people had asked to buy tickets on Saturday afternoon at the booth, and it had already been drawn. So we figured we can sell a heck of a lot more of them, and there are going to be a lot more drawings going on, so why not? So that will be drawn at the banquet. During the
Madam President,
rest of them. Yes, Jerry.
On the same topic, if you can, please support Southwest LA Puppy Raisers as well. They have a little fundraiser as well with along with us at the table. They've been such wonderful volunteers for us. They have a collection of guide dog toys, many of which you may have, but they're nice. They have Nyla bones. They have the knot Nyla bone, and they have a Nyla ring. They have collapsible water bowls for $1. I can't remember how much the Nylas are, but
they vary. I think they go from like
12 to
4 to 12 or 6.
Yeah, the Nyla knot is $12. The wishbone the wishbone and the ring, I believe, are $6 or $8, and the water bowls are just $1.
Yeah.
And they're a nice little collapsible water bowl, and they fit easily into a pouch if you have one on your dog's harness or in your pocket or purse or something. So they had some of the...
They had some little cases for them.
They have some with cases and some they didn't. They were probably going to run out of some
of
those.
Yeah, they had a limited number of cases, but
yes.
Even if without a case, they fold up really nicely.
They fold up wonderfully, yeah.
Better than any I've ever seen.
They had one other bone, and they may be already out of that. What was it?
Oh, Yeah, they had a really unique one that I had never seen before. But they've been selling really well.
But those ones, I think, sold really well, so there may not be any more of those.
So if you want a new toy for your dog, get out there, because they're going very, very fast. All right, is that it, Meredith?
Yes, that's it.
Excellent. Thank you. Good job. All right. I'm sorry? You need to get to a microphone or have the wireless mic passed to you. Hang on. Mary Beth is doing double duty. Bless your heart. And we don't have our usual complement of mic runners this morning for some reason.
Our puppy raisers are having to be very busy at the booth.
Yes.
It's a busy place out there. Who wanted the mic? Back in the back?
I was wondering that. For the next raffle that we have, if we could donate some cute things, you know, towards the raffle, that we could, you know, add to the raffle, we save the money. You know, like little Labrador things or, you know, cute little things. Yeah. For the next one we have. The 50-50.
Oh, the 50-50?
Well, 50-50 is a 50-50.
Well, it's cash. A 50-50, so it's money only. Oh, well, we'll have to think about that. I don't know. Or have that as a separate raffle. Who knows? We'll definitely talk about that.
Bill?
Okay. Hold on, Bill.
Are you ordering any more T-shirts? Because you don't have my size. I ain't very happy.
I know. We actually do have some more to bring in the spring. So that I promise you, I will hold one out for you.
Two.
Two. Okay. Two.
We
can do that. Then you won't have to wait.
Then you won't have to wait, yeah. Just make sure that Dan or Ann, make sure they have your sizes, Bill.
Yeah, if you want to pay Mary Beth, and then we'll bail them out.
We'll get those out to you ASAP. We have your address someplace. We can.
Yeah, it's in the register, the roster.
We'll get you. Yeah,
Anybody else?
We'll take care of you. Any other questions?
Okay.
All right. Hearing none then. Okay, I think... Hold on, let me look at... So there was something I think that remained to... in the Constitution, the bylaws that we needed to vote on. Mary Beth just clarified it for me. So the proposed changes, or the changes that we voted on in the spring in the Constitution bylaws, will appear in this next forward. We missed the last one, but they will be in this next one. So... I guess that was it. So, all right. Perfect time for a website update, Mr. Kaiser.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. And apparently, what had happened was that our illustrious webmaster that we were paying an arm and a leg for, I think we were paying about $250 a year for his sort of lack of service, let our domain name go, unbeknownst to us. And so the whole thing disappeared. So I volunteered to, you know, as many of you know, I was the webmaster original webmaster and creator of CCBB's webpage. And so in working with the CCB webmaster, Joel Isaacs, we've been talking, Ann's been talking to Joel, and I've been talking to Joel about putting a GDUC website on the CCBNet website. So we just have to get your approval. I will maintain the page. The problem has been on the website that it was really a labor of love for, I think, Melita Waters originally, who put a lot of detailed information on the website, and there was a lot of duplication on the website related to national issues and state laws. And I think that we can link to GDUI for a lot of that stuff. I could put links. There's no reason for us to duplicate and maintain the same stuff that you can get on GDUI, because nobody has that kind of time to do that. And I think we have to make a website that's realistic, that can fit the resources that GDUC has. I mean, part of the resources is the amount of time that people have to commit to doing it. So you can't have false expectations or grandiose ideas for what is needed when you don't have the time or the resources to do it. Doesn't mean it's going to be a bad website. It's not going to be a bad website. It's going to be a good website. But I think we have to be realistic. Start out slow. Put the basic stuff like the forward and the MP3, a podcast of our business meeting and our lunch up there, and a link for the California laws, and maybe in a link to subscribe to the GDUC listserv. Does that meet with everybody's approval?
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve Dan's taking on the GDUC website and I think coming up with some great ideas and streamlining it and making it both user-friendly and appealing to everyone. So, all right, I heard a move in a second. Any other discussion?
Well, I just want to say that I think the way we can work it, and Joel says he thinks he can do it, is that we could have a URL of www.gduc.ccbnet.org. So that's pretty good. You know, and any other ideas I think that you should bring up, you know, I think that the website should be pretty much driven by the board with the membership contacting the GDUC board with ideas and suggestions, and that the GDUC board should really discuss each suggestion and then bring it to the webmaster, because I think it needs to be more realistic. You can't have, like I said earlier, grandiose ideas or a lot of stuff that just is, you know, either A, out of everybody's ability to do, and B, too complex for our organization. I mean, I think we have to get back to the basics. We have to, you know, I think we could do something like even have pictures of our shirts up there with the text description. I don't know about, you know, I'm a little leery of having people ordering online through email with their credit card numbers because I don't know if that's safe or not. But I think we could put ordering information with photos on there. That could be easily done. So, you know, any suggestions, if you approve this, if you have any future suggestions, you know, I would suggest just going to the board. And they meet, you know, several times a year over the phone, and they get a lot done that way. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Pat?
Would be any way you could secure your website so you could order T-shirts from there?
There's ways you can do that.
Well, yeah, but they're not accessible. Intuit is the company that a lot of probably makes the only online ordering, and it doesn't work with speech.
Any other questions? Pam?
Yeah, Dan, I have a question. I like the idea of streamlining the website, but will you put the list of all the schools nationwide on the list? Because I have some friends that are looking into getting guide dogs, and they don't want to just go to look at the three schools in California. So I want to send them to the website to look at all the schools.
Well, I can answer that also. We could link to GDUI, to the main GDUI website, and they have not only a list of all the schools, but they actually have a very comprehensive school survey on their thing that gives you more information than you would ever even think of asking about each and every school. So there you go.
Anything else? Okay.
All right. Are there any more questions or further discussion of the website update here? Okay. All those in favor of Dan's suggestions on getting the website up and running again, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. Well, you're up there, Dano. Grab the mic again. And do you have anything on legislation advocacy for us today?
What are we talking about? Oh, legislation. Okay. Last time we read a resolution related to removing the terms minimal protection dogs and rescue dogs from the current California Civil Code 54. And related to the definition of service animal. We got the bill put in print as Senate Bill 905 by George Runner. The bill, unfortunately, what we did made a bonehead mistake not only did I make the mistake, but GDUI was looking into this for us, and so was the Legislative Council, which are the lawyers for the legislature. They didn't catch it. Who caught it was the staff person for Senator Runner, and that is minimal protection dog and rescue dog actually appear in the Americans with Disabilities Act, in which case we cannot preclude those two terms in the state. And so, however, we can't change it in the state. We cannot do anything with that issue. The issue still remains a big issue about dogs that are so-called service animals that are actually comfort dogs and security dogs for people with post-traumatic stress that are afraid to travel in public, and so these dogs get kind of vicious. You got all kinds of pet dogs that are being used as ADA dogs because people don't want to pay for the county licensing because they know they can get it free. And you heard an animal control person a couple years ago talking about that. And the Restaurant Association in California is very upset that there's so many misbehaved dogs coming into their restaurants. They know, as we know, they're not the guide dogs that are causing the problems in the restaurants. They're these, you know, animal guardian folks that are, you know, using disability to take their pets into businesses. So it's a very upsetting thing. One of the things that occurred this year in the Capitol, and it relates to this because it brings up the issue, was the neutering bill, spayed neutering bill, Senate Bill 1634 by Lloyd Levine, and that bill created a controversial storm in the Capitol where you saw the hallways of every floor and the basement of the Capitol literally choked with dog clubs throughout the state of California opposing the 1634 bill, which was to mandate that all dogs be spayed by 4 months, which then I proceeded to work with the author to exempt guide dogs and other service animals from the bill. And we did that. We were successful in that. And so we started a dialogue with CCI, Canine Companions for Independence, GDA, Guide Dogs of America was involved in that, and Guide Dogs for the Blind took a neutral position. I'm on their board, so I recommended that they be neutral. Because we did have the exemption. CCI didn't seem to be satisfied with that exemption. And that for a while, GDA did not seem to be satisfied with that exemption. I don't know why, don't ask me. I think they feel that the neutering bill would eliminate large dogs as we know it. And I think that's a bunch of you-know-what, because that's totally ridiculous. However, Guide Dogs of the Blind's veterinarian department recommended that 4 months was too young, that 6 months was what the California Veterinarian Association recommended for neutering, because you've got to keep the hormones in place for body growth, and that would be too young to neuter these animals, just from a humanistic point of view. So this created a controversy in the Capitol and brought up a lot of awareness, because what was going on in 1634 was they were getting people in wheelchairs that were literally, you know, saying they weren't going to be able to be independent anymore if they couldn't have their service animals. And it got, and which had nothing to do with really neutering, and they were playing upon the emotions of the public. And so it got kind of messy, got kind of contentious, and so when it came to SB 905, the author was very furious with the state of affairs when it came to this issue, and they threw up their hands. However, to their credit, they came back to us a couple weeks ago, and we had a meeting with the with several stakeholders. GDA was there, CCI was there, I was there, Jane Brackman was there from the Guide Dog Board, and Senator Runner's people, a couple people there, and we really brainstormed on how to get around this state issue with the ADA. Jane came up with a couple of ideas. She brought up the study in 1990 about adding other service animals to the Guide Dog Board, and talked about that study. Although it was mentioned that the ADA had just come out, and we didn't, and the language, you know, was, there was kind of issue with the ADA coming out in that study. because of the way the ADA is worded with respect to IDs and all of that kind of stuff. Then we actually came to the point where we threw up our hands and said, we don't know what to do. Now, in the meantime, I've been in contact with the Animal Control Directors Association, the California Animal Control Directors Association, and they're very interested in this issue because, as you heard a couple years ago, they're going broke because they maintain their facilities off the county fees for licensing. And there's so much fraud with this pet issue that I mentioned earlier that they're losing money. And they're very, you know, interested. One of the possible suggestions that they came up with was to require that all service animals, you know, once they're working dogs, once they're with their disabled person, that they be neutered, which, you know, that happens with guide dogs. You know, I hope it happens with guide dogs. Actually, I heard of a dog that they forgot to neuter one time, so that and the dog got, what's that? And the dog actually became pregnant, so that was an interesting thing. Shock to the user, you know. That might be a discouragement. But then people say, well, then all the pet owners will just go out and get their dogs neutered and call them ADA dogs. So you can't win for losing this issue. And until the Department of Justice, you always come back to the issue of we're waiting for the Department of Justice to interpret the ADA and to do the definition of service animal. And they were supposed to do it last January. They didn't. And we're still waiting. I'm sorry? Becky Barnes?
I was one of the people that attended the meeting with the Department of Justice at the end of January, part of the Coalition of Assistance Dog Users. And we had fully expected by now that they would have issued their notice of proposed rulemaking and we would be in the midst of the public comment period. But the definition that we're requesting and the information we gave them will definitely address this whole emotional support, probably even minimal protection and what was the other one?
Rescue.
And rescue. The rescue thing, what Assistance Dogs International is looking at are different categories, and the rescue dogs would fit under a definition of something like a facility dog, where they only have rights of access in their specific area of need. In other words, if you happen to handle a rescue dog and you're on your way to a rescue, I think that would not change. You would still be able to do that. The minimal protection thing definitely needs to be addressed. And so keep your ears open, because the more public comment they get, the better off we'll all be. Nobody really can.
I can find it.
It's a dog that's trained to basically, I think people use that term when they're talking about dogs that they use to, if you're out in public and you're afraid of being out in public, that the dog, security dog is probably the best explanation.
Yeah,
well, sort of, but not quite as well trained or specifically
maybe
trained.
They bury their teeth, rip up your luggage.
Yeah.
Other than that, they don't do much harm. And so, you know, the Coalition of Assistance Dog Organizations definition is basically that there's these classifications, as Becky referred to, and also that the definition of the tasks be defined more clearly with service animals, guide dogs, signal dogs, and service animals, and
specifically trained is very
and specifically trained, and that the species and that it does tie this to just dog species. Is that right? It's dog species related? I think there was something about species in there.
Discuss that. I'm not sure how far we'll be able to get with that. That was discussed. Species was discussed, and it was also discussed in terms of responsibly handled loose dogs, and of course the pit bull.
So that's where we are. I don't particularly think that the state bill is going to go anywhere. What I've asked Mitch Pomerantz to do, and what I think we ought to do as a state organization, is recommend to Mitch, the American Council of the Blind, that they urge the Attorney General of the United States to come out to issue a notice of proposed rulemaking change related to the CATO definition, of course. And I think that would be a really good way to get it going. We have a new Attorney General who's trying to get the Justice Department back in order. They've been totally in turmoil, which is probably why we haven't seen any of this, because that agency is totally a mess.
Yeah.
And so that's what I would recommend. Right. Actually, we could I don't know how this is done. Would the state make a would this group make a recommendation to GDUI that it adopt the resolution? No, we send one to the president and to GDUI. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I would make a motion that we adopt a work on a resolution urging the American Council of the Blind and GDUI to urge the United States Attorney General to adopt a notice of proposed rulemaking on defining the tasks of a service animal.
Second. Any further discussion? Okay, it's been moved and seconded to move forth with a resolution to be sent to GDUI and ACB regarding.
Bill Gillespie, you were the one who seconded?
Yes.
So, okay. Bill Gillespie was the second.
Very good. That will sounds like a great idea to me. All right, any further discussion?
Madam President, a quick question. Dan, do you see this? Are you looking at the resolution being drawn up by tomorrow's meeting?
Yes, I could write it up real quick.
Right. I'd have to leave early here
and go up and do it.
Okay, sounds good.
You'd have CCB and GDUC, and I think it would have a little more teeth behind it. Because one of the problems I see with this whole mess is getting some of the service dog, not necessarily the service dog providers, but a lot of the people who use service dogs on board. Not all of them, but there seems to be a real hardcore group that has this attitude, I have my right to bring in a lousy trained dog if I want to. It's my right, and you goddamn blind people don't take it away from me. And believe me, I was told that, too. Literally, word for word.
Yeah, I can believe it.
All right, so if we feel this is crucial, we get on this for this upcoming, let's do it now and get it to that resolutions committee, then I take it that is the consensus then. That we do this ASAP. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, any more further discussion of the motion? All right. Hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Great. Well, more work for Dan. That's all he needs. Thanks a lot, Dyson. Thanks a lot. Oh no, he's good. He just does that stuff automatically. All right. Membership. Do you? Actually, it's one thing we need to. Well, I can tell right now. We're working on. We have Mary Beth kindly put together a whole bunch of membership packets with the return address envelope and the braille and large print thing like we've done in the past. And there's a whole bunch of them at the exhibit table. So if you have not already done so, please either you can do it there with the assistance of one of the lovely puppy raiser folks, or just take it home with you and do it at your leisure and mail it back to Mary Beth. And all the contact information is there. That's actually good.
I also have some of the packets here in the room as well.
Oh, excellent. But, so if you want to do that now, pick
we'll have
one up
them at both places. Let's wait till after the meeting.
Okay, very good.
Then we'll do that.
If you want that, pick one up, you know, after lunch or whenever. So they're all we're going to be meeting here for lunch also. So please do. Bill?
The dues are $20 a year. If you are a life member, the dues are only $12. We pay $8 to GDUI. Bill?
It's $20 for a year, right?
And, that's correct.
And so it includes what?
I can take that.
Your dues pays for your magazines forward. You are also then a member of the CCB, California Council of the Blind, and also a member of GDUI. And that also, because you become a member of the CCB, you become a member of the ACB. So, and you will get then also all of your magazines, Forward, Blind Californian, Paw Tracks, Braille Forum. I knew that was one I was missing. And so that's what you get with your dues.
So I'm already a member of CCB, and so I'm going to pay dues twice for CCB and ACB?
Yes.
Yes, because this your membership to the $20 that you would be paying it entitles you to Paw Tracks and Forward, whereas if you were a member of CCB without being members of this organization, you'd get the Braille Forum and the Blind Californian, but not the guide dog related material.
And something to clarify, too, is as joining through GDUC, even though you may have already paid through somebody else, we don't have to pay individual amounts to CCB. Our affiliate pays a fixed amount per year. We pay $50 a year for our affiliate to the CCB. And so it doesn't matter how many members we have. The CCB will already know, okay, this is a member of the CCB, and they'll just also indicate that you're also a member of GDUC. And so, and then, of course, they forward that information on to the ACB.
And to address the issue that was just mentioned earlier, I know this comes up from time to time every year where people get solicitations or they get material or through tradition, they pay their money to GDUI and become members of GDUI without going through GDUC. What is preferred, I think, is if you pay through GDUC at the beginning of the year, that money, part of that money, as Mary Beth says, goes automatically. You automatically become a member of GDUI, whereas it doesn't necessarily work the other way around. If you are a member of GDUI and we don't have your record or you haven't paid for membership for GDUC, you may not be a member of this state organization. So it's always we're always asking you to please join GDUI through our channels. That way you get both memberships for this for one check.
It helps make it easier for us as far as record keeping as well. I know it makes Jane's life very much easier if we get the memberships through us and then pass along all that information to them, because then there's not a lot of confusion back and forth between who paid what, when, and where, and all that kind of stuff. So, and just so there's no confusion, we have the membership packets both here in the room and at the booth. I can take care of membership packets for anybody after we finish the business meeting, in between the business meeting and the program. Were there any other questions?
So I'm going to have to pay $20 for...
We need to move on here.
Then I have to pay for my home chapter, too? So that's what I'm...
Everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way all affiliates work.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody does that. Everybody pays their dues for their individual chapters and for any affiliates that you wish to join.
Those are all individual payments, yes.
Oh, yeah. Everything I'd like to... Oh, my gosh. Okay, any other questions before we move on? Because we must move along here. Okay, hearing none. We proposed a change in the bylaws, and I'm not sure which one this is. I believe it's... Must be Article 3, I think, regarding a proposal to assign or to I guess not elect formally, but to choose a membership chairperson to be it would be elected then. Okay, clarification, thanks. To elect a membership chair to serve on the GDUC board. I put my hand on this thing, it doesn't rumble. Great. So that will be something we will do in our elections if this is approved. So do I hear a motion to approve this new member of our board of directors?
So, second.
All right, any discussion? All right, hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. Good. That's one more thing we will be doing as part of our elections here, which we should get right on.
Last thing this treasurer
right
has to do. Yahoo.
Okay. All right. Lee, do you have anything in publications to report?
I promise to get to the National Convention and the people get
I know it's been a little crazy. So we will have a teleconference call here within the next couple of weeks with our publications folks and start working on a brochure and hopefully find a graphic artist, as I mentioned, was mentioned in the minutes, who would be willing to do it pro bono if possible. It sure isn't me. Mary Beth and Debbie Flowers. Yeah. If you feel like you would like one other person, feel free to pick one. Oh, Pat. Excellent. Excellent. Good group.
What's Pat's last name?
LaFrance Wolf.
Pat LaFrance Wolf. Okay.
Okay, very good. The Wolf. Okay, well, I believe now is the pièce de résistance right now, which is our elections. And we will be voting on
several things now. We have two officers, president and secretary. And we have a kind of an interesting situation. We have actually two board positions up. And I believe, let me just check.
Did we decide to?
Yeah, I have that.
Okay, Jerry has a point of information for us regarding the board positions up.
Okay, this is a point of information from the nominating committee, which was comprised of myself, Ken Metz, Mary Beth Randall, and we solicited nominations for the offices and board positions, which I'll clarify in just a minute, for the fall, for this convention. Up for election is the officer of president, and secretary, as well as two board positions. We had a resignation on the board, and we need to fill that position, which will be a 1-year term. Debbie Flowers was elected last year on a 1-year term to fill a move that happened. I think it was Mary Beth Randall who was elected treasurer. And so what we have is one regular, that 1-year term has expired, and now is a regular 2-year term, and we need to fill the remaining 1 year of the board person who resigned. So the nominating committee has the following recommended slate. And again, we always want to mention anyone is free to either nominate themselves or have someone nominate them from the floor for any of the following positions. For president, the nominating committee recommends Ann Kaiser. For secretary, the committee recommends Ken Metz. For the 1-year term, which is open right now, it's Pam Metz. And for the 2-year term, which was just completed by Debbie Flowers, she just completed the 1 year and it's now turning into a regular 2-year board position, the nominating committee recommends Debbie Flowers. So at that point, that's where we are. That's my report. Madam President?
Point of information, Ann?
Maybe.
Just so everybody knows, technically, according to our constitution and bylaws, we vote for one board member at 1 year and then another board position during the next year, technically. But because we've gotten off, we are having to vote for both positions again at this convention. So we hope that eventually that'll kind of work itself back out, and that may be something that before we finalize our constitution and bylaws, that we may need to want to look at that. So just a point of info.
Yeah, thank you, Mary Beth. It seems like the last several years or the last several conventions we've had flip-flops going on between officers and board members changing positions, and it's thrown things off for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 times now. One day we'll get it back in sync. But
Madam President,
in the meantime, Jerry?
Just a quick comment on that. I'm not saying this is not something we can't look at, but I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing. It's almost unavoidable, because people's circumstances change. You know, we just saw that yesterday, last night, with the change in our officers at CCB, where the vice president resigned and in the middle of his term. So, you know, this is a natural part of any organization. One way to deal with that, and it has a lot of advantages anyway, is, again, to encourage all of you to run from the floor, to be part of the group, to join the board if you feel committed and qualified to do that.
Very good. Well, without further ado, let's proceed. We have first the Office of President, and Jerry is going to have to run that one.
Okay, everyone. We are opening nominations for the Office of President, and again, the nominating committee recommends Ann Kaiser for president. Are there any other nominations? Are there other nominations? Again, we're paying Ann is willing to pay $10 if there's another nomination. Hearing no other nominations. Okay, there's been a motion to close nominations, and I'd like to end by acclamation to the Office of President. Second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Boo.
Okay, and congratulations.
Thank you. I love you and I hate you. No. Thank you. I will do my best to serve at the best of my abilities, and I will. My main focus here will be to keep GDUC up and up and up and better, and get our treasury back up to snuff, and keep our energy going, keep our programs interesting, increase our membership and all that good stuff. So thank you for your vote of confidence, and I promise to do my very best to serve you the best I can. Thank you. All right. Okay. Now, the next position available here is for secretary, and did I hear that the nominating committee recommends Ken Metz for the position?
Yes.
Okay. I had heard, I thought he said he didn't want to run again, but apparently that's not the case.
He doesn't? He doesn't?
Hold on.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry.
Pam,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely,
okay.
You know, that's what happens when you have too much coffee. You're absolutely, I wrote the board positions down. I neglected to write, scratch everything I just said. That's absolutely right. Ken and I talked about that, and we said he really did not want to run for secretary, and that Dan, in fact, I got a voicemail and an email from Dan indicating that he'd run for secretary. So I completely forgot about that. Excuse me.
I mean, it's you know, all the same to me, but I just remembered him saying, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know what it is? They look so much alike. It's easy to confuse them.
My apologies to Dan.
I keep hearing this. Everybody's calling Dan, Ken, and Ken, yeah. Dan, and all weekends. I'm beginning to wonder, oh, my gosh, the twins. Okay. Dan and Ken are just, you know.
The idea was so horrible. That's why I forgot about it, I guess.
One and the same.
Does that mean you're taking Ken as well as Dan home with you?
Well, I don't know about Pam would say about that. Does it mean I have to take all three home with me? Okay, moving right along. I'm not touching this one. Okay, I know. This is California, after all. We do it all. We swing every way, every which way. Okay. All right. Getting back to business here. Are there any other nominations for secretary? Going twice, are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations?
And, Madam President, to atone for an error, I move that Dan be elected as secretary by acclamation, and nomination be closed.
All right, we have moved and second that Dan be elected by acclamation. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? All right, Dano.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
Michael
Ken will be very thankful.
Well, I just want you to know that I do have the ability. I was secretary of our chapter. How many terms in? Two? Maybe three?
Yeah, a couple. Mm-hmm.
Couple at least. Couple terms. And so I do know how to take minutes, and I will get them to the officers right away. And I do know email, and I can provide them in Braille to the president as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Dan. All right, next we have the two-year term, the full-term board position currently being served by Debbie Flowers. Are there any other nominations? Twice. Are there any other nominations? And three times. Are there any other nominations?
Madam President, move to accept to elect Debbie Flowers as board member, and the nominations close.
Okay, her motion, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, several seconds. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Excellent. Well, unfortunately, Debbie couldn't be with us at this convention, but we know she'll do a great job, and she's been very, very good, very proactive on our board thus far, and I'm glad to have her back again. So, yay, Debbie, wherever you are, yay. You betcha. Okay, this isn't the last, however, but the last actual board. Well, then there's one more after this. The 1 year term that, due to the resignation of one of our members, this will be for this 1 year, and then they can run again for a full 2 year term. So this would be, we have no one at this time. At least we do. Of course we do. Okay. Sorry, Pam, I did that again.
Boy,
the Mets family is getting screwed.
They're getting dissed left and right, man.
I'm dissing you bad. Okay. Okay, Pam Metz is our nominee. Are there any other nominations?
Bill Gillespie.
Okay, we have...
Bill, I'll come to you.
Okay, we have before us the Pam Metz and Bill Gillespie going twice. Are there any other nominations? Last time, are there any other nominations? All righty. How are we going to do this?
They get.
I guess we'll probably
they get
do
5 minutes.
Okay. Well, we can do.
And if Pam chooses, I'll speak for her.
Okay. Let's keep it brief. I'm going to kind of take executive privilege here, and let's just make it 1 minute for each speaker, because we need to really move on and get to our regular program.
Yeah, speaking for you, Bill.
So, who's speaking for you, Pam?
Jerry's
speaking for Pam, and who's speaking for Bill?
Who's speaking for you, Bill?
Lynn Morton.
Lee Morton.
Okay, Lee Morton is going to speak for Bill.
I have a mic here, Lee.
Okay, very good. Take it away, Pam.
Okay.
Jerry. Geez, I'm doing good today.
All right.
Sorry about that.
Hey, Froggy.
Well, I want to heartily recommend Pam Metz for the board. She's been the, as was pointed out before, she's a relatively new, newly active member of CCB. She's been involved quite a while, but she's now the president of Greater Los Angeles. She's been involved with Greater Long Beach as well, other groups. More importantly, however, she is an active member and a starter, the initiator of one of the Guide Dogs for the Blind, and has begun an effort to develop a chapter in Southern California. Her commitment and involvement with guide dog affairs, guide dog advocacy, I think is very self-evident, and I'd love to see her on the board so that she can lend her spirit of activism to this organization. Thank you.
All right. Well, I think a lot of you remember a few years ago, Bill Gillespie was one of our first scholarship winners. Since then, he has been an active participant with us. He's come to the conventions, and he's really gotten involved with CCB. I believe he's his chapter's delegate now.
Vice president,
and just going to school and just getting into his blindness, just really learning his skills. He's a relatively new member of our elite circle of blind people. And I think he would offer some new blood, and in an area that really, I don't think we've really had any representation from the, Inland Empire, Redwood Empire, there we go. And it's been a very vibrant part of CCB, but it's never really been involved with us in Gaduck. So I hope you will consider Bill's request to be on the board and give him the privilege. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Good job.
Oh, Jane Brown.
Yay, hi, Jane.
Thank you.
Okay,
would you be willing to count hands for that?
There we go.
We'd like to keep it as kind of anonymous as possible. So.
Momentary discussion. Hold on.
Great.
We have our lovely... I just want to let you know all right now, we have Jane Brackman here, our special guest speaker, and she has offered to, I made her do it.
She walked in just in time to do some work.
To do the hand count for this election. So at this point, I will ask everyone wishing to vote for Pam Metz, please raise your hand now and keep it up until told to put it down.
Only one hand, please.
Only one hand, please. No feet. Vote early, vote often. Okay. All righty. All those wishing to vote for Bill Gillespie, raise your hands and keep them up till they'll put them down. All right, Jane, what's our final tally here?
Bill Gillespie has 10, so our winner...
Bill
Gillespie has 4.
Okay, Pam Metz has 10,
right.
Bill Gillespie has 4, so
congratulations, Pam.
All right. Very good. Okay, we do have one more thing to vote on, actually two more things, very quickly. We have instituted a new board position, a membership chair, and that person will be working very closely with Mary Beth Randall, our treasurer, to keep count of membership and help with the membership drive when need be. And I think that's a very important position. So we've decided to make that an actual board position with the inherent privileges and responsibilities. So,
and the inherent salary, of course.
That goes without saying. So, without further ado, are there any nominations?
Madam President, I nominate Pat LaFrance Wolf.
Very good. Okay. Are there any other nominations? Going once. Are there any other nominations? three times. Any other nominations? Okay. Okay, we close nominations. Are there any? I'm sorry. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And Pat LaFrance Wolf by acclamation. Congratulations, Pat.
No, it's a 30-year term.
30-year.
Are you like, in the back or something, Pat?
Sounds like a mortgage.
Is Pat here right this second?
Does Pat know she's being corralled into this? Okay.
Yeah, I think
good.
She knew. Okay.
We did do a speaker thing, but I figured just for the sake of brevity, it's probably just, you know, we all know Pat. We know what she's done, who she is, and we love her anyway. So
she's been a long-time member of GDUC.
A very long-time member and very active in ACB. She's been on the board. She's Pat. You know, what can we say? Okay. So now we have a new thing. We are going to be voting for delegate and alternate for the state. And this will be for this year. Is this just the one year?
Yeah, it's just one year.
Okay, for this next spring and upcoming fall convention. So we have spring 2008 and fall 2008. So these will be for a year. So this is something we changed here. So for delegate for the state, are there any nominations?
I nominate Lorraine Foster.
Okay, Lorraine Foster. Lee? Oh, okay. Okay. No can do.
That's a conflict. Oh, okay.
Okay, so Lorraine, was that you, Lorraine? Okay, very good. So I don't have to ask you if you accept the nomination. Okay, are there any other nominations? Number two, are there any other nominations? And going three times, any other nominations?
Move to accept Lorraine and close nominations.
There's been a second.
First and a second. All right, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, Lorraine Foster by acclamation. Congratulations. You get to get up and go to credentials at 8 o'clock Friday morning. Hey.
What a great job.
All right. Alternate delegate, are there any nominations from the floor? Alternate delegate. Well, somebody's gone.
I would like to. Oh, we have to have somebody other than a board member, I assume.
No.
I would like to nominate Debbie Flowers as our alternate delegate.
And you know she would accept?
Oh, you know what? I should have asked her, I guess. I'll call her and ask. So we'll ask some more.
Okay, we have Debbie Flowers as one nominee. Are there any other nominations? Well, maybe I'll nominate myself. Okay, very good. Okay, hey, thanks. Okay, so we have Debbie Flowers and Ann Kaiser. And we need to find out if Debbie does indeed accept the nomination. So going twice, are there any other nominations? And three, are there any other nominations? Okay, that's the three times here, so...
Do we have to move? Well, we don't have to close.
We need to move. Somebody needs to move.
All right,
to close.
I'll move nominations be closed then.
Moved and second that nominations be closed. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, so now we're waiting to hear if Debbie indeed does accept the nomination.
I've got Debbie on the phone, and she does accept that nomination.
All right, very good. Since I'm one of the nominees, I'll have Jerry run this one.
Okay. Jay?
Jade, are you ready?
We'll need a speaker for Debbie and for Ann.
Yeah. Okay. We'll entertain speakers for Ann Kaiser and Debbie Flowers.
This is Mary Beth Randall. I'll speak for Debbie.
And I'll say a few words for Ann. So let's, Debbie was nominated first. We'll let her go first. Mary Beth, why don't you say a few words?
All right. Thank you. This is Mary Beth, and I would like for you all to vote for Debbie Flowers as our alternate delegate. She's a hard worker. She's come to almost all of our conventions so far for the last few years. She just was unavoidable for her not to be here this time. And she has wonderful ideas, and she's very good at going to meetings and taking notes and things like that. And I feel would very well represent our organization as alternate delegate if for some reason she needs to be available. And she's been really great as vice president of our local chapter and has come to conventions as our alternate delegate and other such things in the past and done very well with those duties. And so I would like to urge for people to vote for Debbie Flowers, please.
Okay, very good. And just a few words about Ann Kaiser. I think her work with GDUC also is self-evident. It's she's served as this organization's president for two terms now, and one and a half technically. We haven't finished the term yet, but she's clearly been a very hard worker, a strong advocate for GDUC's interests. She's been always available to any member, regardless of their issues or concerns, and I think she would be a fair representative as far as an alternate delegate in the event that Lorraine cannot attend any meetings or cannot vote. You know, the job of the delegate and alternate is critical, because they to really do this the organization's service, they need to put aside their personal opinions, their personal feelings, and think for the, because the delegate and alternate, of course, are representing the organization itself, not just themselves. So we need people who are fair, who are well considered, and I think Ann would fit those bills. So I'd urge you to consider Ann Kaiser for the alternate delegate. Okay, so we are ready to vote. Jane, you're ready to count for us? Okay, so all those in favor of Debbie Flowers for alternate delegate, please raise your hand. Okay, all those in favor of Ann Kaiser, raise your hand. Okay, we've done the tally, and Ann has 8 votes. Debbie has 5, so congratulations, Ann, for alternate.
Thank you.
Debbie didn't want to run against Ann necessarily, but she congratulates Ann, and is very happy for her.
Tell Debbie she can do it. Run again next year for the... No, this is for 2. Oh, that's right. This is 1 year. So confusing.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Right.
I will do my best.
I'm going to let you go, Debbie.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye, yeah. Debbie.
Thank you, Debbie. Yay. Everybody misses you, Debbie.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that concludes our election portion of this program today. So, does anyone have any old business to bring up before we conclude our business meeting? All right, hearing none, any new business? Anyone would like to bring up any announcements, any topics of concern? All right, well, hearing none, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It is officially 10:27 a.m. We adjourned. So, all right, thank you very much, everyone. Okay, Mary Beth, take it away. Okay, we're officially moving on to our regular morning speakers program. So, take it away, Mary Beth.
Ooh, I have to talk again. Okay. Okay. This morning we have with us Jane Brackman. She is the executive director of our state board of guide dogs. And Jane Brackman has been doing this for a few years.
1.5 years.
Before being on the state guide dog board, she worked for Guide Dogs of America. And if I have my memory correct, you were the executive director of GDA, and she is going to talk to us this morning about an update on the State Guide Dog Board, and we are very glad that she could come and be with us today. So I'm going to give the mic over to her, so give a round of applause for Jane.
Yeah, I'll use this one. Here, let me get that
sit down. It doesn't matter.
All right.
Okay,
go ahead
and sit down. Be comfortable.
Okay. All right. Well, as the executive officer for the last year and a half of the State Guide Dog Board, it's really a pleasure to speak to the guide dog handlers of California and also my colleagues from some of the schools. I have about 20 to 30 minutes to speak, and I'm going to talk about a couple of controversial things that you might have been wondering about. I'm going to talk about why we have regulation in this state and justify that. I'm going to describe the purpose of the board, tell you what the executive officer does, and discuss my visions for the board's future. A lot of people ask, why does California have regulation when no other states have regulation? And this question is posed to me quite a bit, often by handlers like yourself. California has 36 million people, which is well over 12% of the population of the United States. New York, in comparison, only has 6%. About 20 to 25% of the guide dog profession is happening in California. Depending on which list you're looking at, whether there's 10 to 15 guide dog schools, three of those operate in our state. 2,000 of the 10 to 12,000 handlers live in California, and 100 of the estimated 400 to 500 instructors work in California. So one of the answers to why we have regulation is just volume. I like to think of California as a state that is working in the guide dog field rather than just thinking of the three schools as separate entities. And together, in the last fiscal years, those schools graduated 378 teams. They provided services for 2,200 graduates. Among them, they employ 340 people. They employ 18 apprentices. They graduated 5 instructors. They enjoy the services of 1,025 volunteers, not including the 1,780 puppy raisers in the state who are raising 1,242 dogs to be guide dogs. In total, the school spent more than $34 million on the programs in California last fiscal year. One of the reasons, I'll give you an example of one of the reasons that regulation works in our state. As you know, I think there's 5 states in the United States that have laws that enforce accessibilities for puppy raisers and their dogs. This issue has come before us and the three schools about every 3 or 4 years. What we say to the puppy raisers is that in those 5 states, they have a total of, say, under 100 puppy raisers. It's easy to sort of make a statement for a state when they're not dealing with a lot of the issues that our consumers are dealing with. That when a puppy raiser takes an animal into a restaurant, that dog may not be ready to go in there. We feel that because we have well over 1,200 puppies in California, that that's not a law that we want to support. So that's one of the things that we're always looking at here is volume in the state, and that's one of the reasons we believe there should be regulation. And, you know, I might add that I was an executive director of a school for 3 years. I worked at Guide Dogs of America for a total of 9 years. So I have been on the other side of the table, and I know what some of the issues are and the complaints are. One of the things I hear, complaints I hear about from handlers or comments is that the state only has minimum standards. Why do we only have minimum standards? If we're going to regulate schools, why not have higher than minimum standards? And what I say to that is minimum standards compared to what? In California, if you want to start a guide dog school, you must submit to the board a program for each of the 3 things that a school does, that the school must do in California. Number 1, how do you train your dogs? Number 2, what kind of curriculum do you use to educate your students? And I think one of the things most of us don't think about is that the schools are institutions for training future guide dog mobility instructors. And so all 3 of these things have to have written curriculum. That curriculum has to be submitted to the board. So when we say minimum standards, we say minimum to maintain safety for the consumer, which is you, but not, in other words, we don't want to interfere with a school as technology changes, as orientation and mobility procedures change. You don't want the board to be telling school how to manage itself. And that's why we mean a minimum standard. And I want to give you an example of minimum compared to what. The board is working with the guide dog schools on rewriting the written exam for the licensees. This is something that has to be done every 7 years. And I got an email from somebody at the Office of Examination Resources who said, because our first workshop is next Friday and next Thursday and Friday, gave me a list and said, we want the subject matter experts, that's the licensees, who are coming to the meeting to revise the test. You know, who revises the test? It's the experienced guide dog instructors, by the way. They wanted them to bring a book, a reference books for how to train guide dogs. And I said, well, what do you mean, a reference book? They said, well, we need to support some of the new questions on the test. So we want them to refer to some of the current books on how you train guide dogs. And I thought about it for a second, and I said, you know, the California schools wrote the book on how to train guide dogs. There isn't another book on this. They're the ones that wrote the what we call the occupational analysis, which is the job description. The way that happened was the guide dog instructors in the state, and we have about 92 licensed instructors, were surveyed, and they explained what is the job now. It's not the same as it was in 1955. And we take that information, the Department of Consumer Affairs takes the information, and they crunch the numbers, and then they give a report, and that is the job description. We're the only state that has a job description. And my feeling is that some of the other schools are now looking at that occupational analysis, not because they want to change theirs, but because we're on record for describing it. They're doing the same thing. Why should they reinvent the wheel? They can just take ours. So that gives you kind of an example of when we say minimum standard, it's really compared to what? What is the minimum standard? Just to give you a background, people really don't know what the board is or what it does. And we're just like the medical board, the dental board, the contractors board. The Department of Consumer Affairs has 28 boards and bureaus. Most states have a medical board, a contractors board, and so on and so forth, but they don't have a guide dog board. We are the smallest board. We have one person, one staff person, yours truly. I have a part-time assistant who works 4 to 6 hours a week. We bring in about $140,000 a year. Our budget is about $125,000 a year. We license 92 instructors and 3 schools. The medical board, on the other hand, employs 254 people, brings in $36 million, spends $38 million, and has 122,000 licensed physicians. We are a very small board. One of the things, what have I done on the board? I want to tell you a little bit about my own experience. What happened when I came on board? And I want to talk a little bit something about Andy will know. Andy Crusoe, who's in the room, will recognize this story. In dogs, there are many conditions that cause dwarfism, just like in people. Dwarfism is a symptom. It's not a disease. Not all of them are as cute as the symptom, as the condition that causes Pembroke Welsh Corgis, which are dwarf dogs, as you know, or dachshunds. It's suspected that 1 out of 100 German Shepherd dogs is born with a form of dwarfism that is so bad that 1 out of 100 puppies die in the nest. Now, the good news is that University of California at Davis is now taking cheek swabs from dogs that do live for a few years. I think the longest dog living is a 4-year-old dwarf German Shepherd. They only live for 1 year. So they're very close to identifying what the mutation or the mutations are. But the reason I'm telling you this is that many years ago at Guide Dogs of America, we were given 2 German Shepherds, donated 2 puppies who were about 6 weeks old. And they were both really cute, but one was really cute. I mean, he was so cute, the staff fought over who got to bring that dog home every night. And he was so cute, we put him in a Christmas stocking, and that was our Christmas card. Now, mind you, we didn't know there was differences, but the litter mate, who wasn't nearly as cute, started to grow. And this little dog didn't grow. We named him Gizmo. I think it was Gizmo, right? And ends up that he had a form of dwarfism. And the funny thing about Gizmo was his litter mate grew to full size. Gizmo was a medical anomaly, and so some of the veterinary clinics were really interested in doing the surgery to keep him alive as a donation. And he was so cute, and everybody wanted to pick him up all the time. But you know what? I'm kind of like Gizmo at the State Guide Dog Board. Gizmo, every time you pick that dog up, he looked at you and said, you know, I'm a German Shepherd. Give me some integrity. I may be cute, but I have a sense of pride. I do something that's really important. This dog did not want to be picked up. And the reason that I say this is because when I came to this position a year and a half ago, as I said, we were the smallest board. We were also the cutest board because everybody at the Department of Consumer Affairs thought we were about dogs. And they really didn't understand how important it is to license instructors, how long it takes. They didn't really understand why there's a licensing board. And so I was like Gizmo in many ways, and I would go to meetings and say, look, you know, I know the dogs are nice, but this isn't what we do. What we do is protect consumers, and by doing that, we maintain minimum standards at the schools. So it took a while, and then in the first year, the department said, okay, well, then we need to start looking at the examinations and sort of revamp the way those are given. One of the things that we have done in conjunction with the schools, and I'm very happy to say the schools are working together on this, is to revitalize the practical exam so that when the instructors come in for the test, it's not given by the board anymore. The raters are actually senior instructors from each of the three schools. So it's the professionals who are evaluating the apprentices as they take their tests. As I said, we're working now on the written exam. We have worked very hard in the last year on bringing our website into compliance with the ADA, and the department is making sure that that happens as they are with the other boards. One of the things I did when I came on, you have to remember that this is a small board. We had absolutely nothing on the computer. Everything was paper files, going back to 1948 when the board was started. And so one of my objectives was to get everything on the computer, including as many files as we could that you could access yourself as Word documents. And I would say we've been very successful in that regard. So most, if you ever emailed me and said, gee, I'd like to see, you know, the lawsuit between iDog Foundation and the Guide Dog Board from 1968, I would be able to send it to you. So, and if I couldn't, I can scan that and put it in the proper documentation so you can have it. So there's a lot of accessibility for you. What do I do at the board? What do we do in the office? I receive about 110 inquiries a month. 12% are about board member business. 3% are about service dog problems. Whether or not it's retailers complaining, people who have comfort dogs who want to know how to get their dog on an airplane. We have 4% from public consumers, people who want to know more about guide dogs. 40% of the activities that we do have to do with the Department of Consumer Affairs, and that includes legislation, enforcement, and budget. 3% are people calling about their dog food allowance. 15% is testing and licensing. 10% is school issues. And quite honestly, a miserable 9% is from guide dog handlers. This is the Department of Consumer Affairs, and yet you folks never call, you never write. So, we, you know, I'm like the, you know, Maytag repairman. Nobody ever calls. We received in last fiscal year 8 official complaints. An official complaint is something that I have to write up for the governor or that we have to take action on formally. Here would be an example. A woman in Northern California paid $7,000 for a trained guide dog that was delivered to her house. There was a client, a graduate from one of the schools who lived in another state, who did not want aftercare or follow-up. There was one school who had reports of a handler abusing a dog. So those would be the serious complaints we get. The unofficial complaints, we get about 50 of those a year. Besides your complaints about being denied access to a restaurant or a hospital or having to pay a deposit in an apartment, it's about service dogs, assistance dogs, comfort dogs, service dogs, need I go on? That is a huge part of what we're dealing with. It's what's going to be on our plate in the future is how do we deal with this problem? And this is not to say that legitimate programs need, I don't want to say that legitimate programs are needing regulation. I don't have a solution for this. I'm just telling you it's a problem, but I'm preaching to the choir. I know that. What needs to be done? Like I said, you need to put the word consumer back in the Department of Consumer Affairs. We need to come up with an emergency preparedness program for all of the handlers in California. Keep in mind that the board, unlike the schools only have their graduates' information. The Department of Consumer Affairs, the guide dog board, has all of the graduates' information. However, it hasn't been utilized in any way, shape, or form. In my opinion, I'd like to see anonymous information collected from consumers, including if you've used a guide dog for many years or you've had several guide dogs, how long has the dog worked? How much do you spend at the veterinarian every year? These are things that the Department of Consumer Affairs can collect anonymously and then publish those reports for the schools and for you as well, so we can get a real handle on what's happening out there. We need canine health studies. I'd like to see a cohort study where all the consumers in California volunteer to participate in a longitudinal study of their dogs from the time they get them to the time they die. I think it's time for the Department of Consumer Affairs to publish a newsletter once a year, if not more often, which goes to consumers. And very important is this issue of finding a way to license out-of-state instructors through some kind of reciprocity. That way, your schools, if you come from the CNI or any other out-of-state school, those instructors do not have to come in here taking a risk of being caught working illegally. The future of the board, this board will be sunsetted in 2011, which is a relief because it used to be every 2 years, and that's pretty much what the executive officer did, was work on that. We have to decide about regulation. Do we want more regulation or less regulation? The schools are already working together, but I would like to see them continue and become more of a team. As I said, we need consumer involvement. And I know that many guide dog handlers say, well, why should we support the guide dog board? What do they do for us? And this is my short answer. It's the only government agency in the country that is available to guide dog consumers. If you don't support the board or don't like what it does, then you need to take the time to change it. And it's willing to be changed. My tenure ends March 1st. I will no longer be the executive officer of the State Guide Dog Board. I'm going on, I'm making a transition and going back to what I've done in the past. And now it's your turn. So I'll take any questions you might have.
Okay, I have two questions. For a person that received my current dog from an out-of-state program, are you interested in survey results from people who didn't obtain their dogs in California? And secondly, my husband and I are going to be a part of a cab driver's training over a four-week period in November for probably 1,000 cab drivers. And we're looking for the best sources of information for those folks for that training that we can find, and wondered if you had any suggestions other than what a school might provide or possibly what GDUI would provide.
Okay, Cindy, let me answer the second one first. Yes, the Department of Consumer Affairs also has the Department of Motor Vehicles and also all of the registration and licensing and permits for taxi cab drivers in California. So that would be something we could refer to in another department and get you information on. So absolutely. You can go to our website, and my email address is on the website. If you would email me, I'll send that to you.
What is the website?
It is Guide Dogs. Let me get with you. I have a card, and let me read it off the card, Cindy, and then I'll give it to you afterwards. Okay. To answer your first question, that's a really good question. We know that we have schools coming in from other states to provide guide dogs. That's a fact, and probably there's probably 20 to 25 incidents of that every year. The fact of the matter is that the board, even though that's a misdemeanor, it's not the board's intention to limit the services you get from your own school. So what we are trying to do is come up with a program where we can bring other schools in. Now, I am getting around to answering your question. The schools in California pay a substantial amount of money to this regulatory agency for us to provide oversight. So we could bring your instructors in, and we can even give them reciprocal licenses, but they're probably going to balk at having to pay a certain amount of dollars to provide service to you. What has to be done is the board has to find a way for out-of-state schools to want to participate in some way with what the board offers. Right now, we don't offer anything that they want to participate in. My thoughts about getting surveys out to other schools. I mean, we have, what, 2,000 handlers. In the U.S., there's 12 to 14,000. So we can get good data, but if we can use their mailing lists as well, we can get great data. So, yeah, I mean, what I would like to see happen is that the board, acting as an independent agency of a state government, meaning we have no bias, doing an anonymous survey of handlers throughout the country where they're anonymous. They don't have to tell. They're not. We ask them not to tell us where they get the dog. We would hope that the other schools would send that out, that we would then provide the report, pay for the report, and then give it to them. So the answer is, yeah, we want to do that, and that's what we hope to do in the future. Any other questions?
If you have a question, just go ahead and stand up, and I can come find you.
My family lives in Michigan, and my niece and nephew and their kids are raising a guide dog. In Michigan, the regular full service dogs can go anywhere that people go. There, they have to get permission to take them places, and that really cuts down on the amount of experiences these dogs can have. And I think it would be very nice to have a uniform accessibility for dogs in training, because they're not, if they go to a restaurant and they can't bring their training dog in, their puppy, then they can't bring them in.
Okay, point taken. That was on the agenda of the board meeting, I think, two meetings ago. We had some people who asked that same question. And I surveyed the schools and asked them their opinions, and this is the consensus of all three. Laws are made for people. They're not made for dogs. They're made for people who need accessibility. Let me ask you this question. I was a puppy raiser, and let's say, first, I should preface that my dog was perfect. But let's just say that somebody's dog wasn't completely housebroken. They go into the restaurant. The dog has, you know, got a little jacket on that says Guide Dogs of America or Guide Dogs for the Month. The dog urinates on the floor. Now, you happen to be coming in an hour later. So these puppies are not trained to be guaranteed accessibility. Our opinion is that it's up to the restaurant owner or the retailer to provide accessibility for puppy raisers. And the second thing is, and this was a point made by Guide Dogs for the Blind, and I think it's an excellent point. And Keith, you might want to correct me. But even if there was a law in California that guaranteed a puppy raiser access, the schools would tell that puppy raiser, if you're denied access, don't go in, don't make anything out of it, go somewhere else. Guide dog handlers are really educated in how to deal with that kind of situation, and puppy raisers aren't. And when you're talking about having 1,700 puppy raisers in the state, that's a lot of people that aren't really educated on how to interface with a restaurant owner. So I say that's my opinion, but it's really not. I'm just a staff person, and I like to collect the opinions of the schools. But that's pretty much the position in California, and I imagine until there's some serious changes, that won't change.
I can come back over here.
No.
No, right now in the state of California, puppy raisers don't have rights.
The instructors do have rights to take puppies in training into public places, but only the instructors. Yeah.
Because they're beyond a certain point anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, if the puppy raiser is going to quote the ADA, you know, he's quoting it for people who are actually using service dogs. Or, you know, if your principal says don't bring your dog to your school, just bring it to church. Or find out where you can take it. There always seems to be a place that's an alternative. Yes, one more question.
Yes, I'm hoarse, so I'm going to say this as fast as I can.
I'm Pam Madsen. I live in Southern California, and I have two questions. One is, you were talking about training, the older trainers were training the newer trainers in. And one of my questions is, when they're training the dogs, and these dogs have made it through all the phases, and they're working with them and things, because we're dealing with more transportation issues in Southern California, are they putting that as a part of the test? Because I know my new guide had no idea what a ramp was on a van. And it took me 4 months to train her to that ramp. And I don't know if anybody else has had that issue, but mine did. And I was just wondering, are they looking at the issues with transportation and other things like that in Southern California? And the other one was, I forgot it actually. The other one had to do with, when we call you on a consumer complaint, will it go directly to you or to the board?
It goes directly to me. The board is really involved in policy, not in the day-to-day administration of the Department of Consumer Affairs boards. And when I say it goes to me, I'm the one who picks up the phone. So, and I have to say that I'm very prompt.
She is.
So, and then as far as training the dogs for ramp, does this, maybe the schools want to address that? Because I don't, is that what you're asking? If the schools...
Yeah, the lifts, yes.
Well, Mr. Jordan, are you...
Okay, hold on, let me bring it over to you. You're over here, I guess. And that's hoping that you're right.
Actually, I'll take a stab at a couple of the things. My name's Chuck Jordan. I'm from Guide Dogs of America. I'm new in this industry. But I've been been doing this for 3 months now. But to answer your questions about the transportational problems and what they are now in comparison to 20 years ago or 40 years ago, you're right. Things constantly change. Keep in mind, though, that dogs in training at guide dog schools are taught basic fundamental skills that everyone that getting a guide dog will have to be able to accomplish. Not everyone will be facing or having to deal with some of the ramps of some of the access vehicles, particularly like in Southern California. I don't know if it's any more prevalent in other areas or what have you. Usually the ramps are the lifts, if introduced properly, and I think whatever school you get your dog from, if you run into a problem like that, if you contact them, they will send someone out to help you introduce the dog into that problem, you know, quickly. But even though I worked in the service dog industry for 6 years too, and of course, in people in wheelchairs, you would think because of the ramps and stuff and the lifts that the dogs there would be trained with those. And they actually don't train them in the training process with the lifts. What they do is, as people bring their own vehicles for the training, is they do the individual modifications at that point in time, because each ramp or each lift is different and somewhat unique. So the dog has to get used to that. And ironically, that dog that's used to their own creaky, loud, make noise making ramp might get into another vehicle that's real smooth and not making noise, and that will frighten it. Because here again, we tend to think of our dogs as being perfect. And although Jane said that she had the perfect dogs, I've seen those records on her dogs and they don't reflect that up. But in reality, I think the schools try to accommodate and adjust their training processes as much as we can to keep up with the times. But there are always going to be some glitches that you can't deal with until enough consumers are having the same problem to make it have to become part of the protocols of training. Many of you that have used dogs for a number of years, have gone through multiple dogs, can probably remember back in a time frame that no school trained dogs on escalators. Remember that? You know, now most schools, or I think pretty much all schools, do train dogs on escalators, but not all dogs are escalator certified. You know, we don't at GDA drop a dog because it's not escalator trained. That person will have to use other modes of getting from floor to floor. Just like some people should not be going on escalators if they have balance issues or confidence issues or things of that nature. So one of the flexibilities in training has to be able to match the team, the dog, to meet the needs of that individual client. We do the basics to get it across, but we can't, you know, hand train every dog unless we know going into the situation we have a particular need and we're going to pre-match a dog, then we try to make that adjustment. And kind of getting to the puppy situation a little bit, because I don't want our young friend over here leaving being concerned about the socialization and your nephews not being able to socialize it. Sometimes I think graduates and even puppy raisers put more onto what the puppy raiser is supposed to be doing than should be put on them as a responsibility. Socialization to outward stimulus and environments is exactly that, socialization, not training to be a guide dog. Okay, so you can duplicate many exposures to the same types of things that the person, the young person or the adult person raising the dog that can't go into a restaurant, for example, they can find other venues that simulate that same exposure. As far as going to the schools, I know no puppy raiser that's ever taken their dog to school with them on a full-time basis. You know, yeah, or even usually there you have to get special permission to bring them to events, because keep in mind that a school is really not technically what you would call a place of public accommodation. It is a restricted, invited group of people that come there. So, you know, when a person goes there, the same rights don't necessarily apply even to users in some respects. And I know there have been many, many lawsuits. Some the complainant wins and some they don't. So the puppy raiser's job is to, number one, a very important thing is to housebreak the dog, not raise it to be a housebreaker, but to be housebroken, to give it love and individual attention so that the relationship between the dog and humans is bonded and founded. Get the dog into as many environments as possible to make the dog well exposed to noise, to confusion, to reactivity, to vehicles and things of that nature. But you're still not training that dog to be a guide dog. They need to have the exposure to it so that when the trainer does take it in, that the dog at least understands what they're doing and the trainer puts professional skills on it. But to give you an understanding of how well integrated the puppy raising program in the state of California is, and they're so used to it throughout the entire length of the state, we had a trainer Thursday, in Burbank, where we train every day, working a guide dog into the shopping center. A young manager came running up and says, "I'm sorry, you can't bring that dog in here. It doesn't have a blanket on it." And the instructor explained, "Oh, this is a guide dog in training. No, no, you can't bring it in because it has to have a blanket." No, this is an actual guide dog. "I know, but it has to have a blanket." And so it's kind of almost going the other way. You know, you may get refused, but they'll let those kids with the puppies in. So, Keith, did you want to comment at all on this stuff? So I hope that answers your questions. But the schools are very cognizant of the fact that as our society changes, we have to kind of modify and adapt to meet the needs of the consumers with these dogs. I know I started training dogs in 1968 to be guide dogs. And I know traffic training and traffic awareness demands on the dogs then was not nearly what it is today. And doesn't everybody like the new silent electric cars?
No, I hate those things. I think we have time for a couple more questions. If you want to stand up, please, and I think Mary will bring the microphone over.
Okay, come on, Lee.
Well, first, I wanted to comment on this puppy raiser thing. When I've dealt with puppy raisers, and I've talked to a lot of them in the San Diego area, a lot of times the leaders of the groups contact stores and make arrangements and explain what they're doing. And I know, like, San Diego Transit gets together with them, and they get a bus out, and the dogs get exposed and ride a bus. Arrangements are made to expose puppies. It's a little harder. Maybe you have to go through some hoops because you don't have the access laws, but it's still done. But I wanted to say, did I understand it right, Jane, that you were leaving the guide dog board, or was just by the time the board was sunsetted, is it imminent?
Yes, I've given...
We will miss you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I will have been in this position for 2 years. As all of you know, I worked at one of the schools and I served as a board member for 3 years. And it's time for me to transition out. I feel that I'll continue to make a contribution. I'm one of 5 to 7 writers that write about canine health and genetics in popular dog magazines. So what I do is I take the science and work with the principal investigator to rewrite it so that breeders understand how it impacts them. And by doing that, I feel like I'll continue to make contributions in sort of an indirect way to this field. But I'll be back. I'll be back as a, you know, participant. So I'm still here. Any other questions? I think we have time for one more.
To the lady that was that said she and her husband were going to be working with taxi cab drivers, I do ride the cabs quite a bit in San Diego when I have short distances to go. And if you're dealing with Muslim cab drivers, and I'm finding that more and more of them are, and they have a deathly fear of any dog. It has to do with their religion. But if not to embarrass them, but if you just quietly say to them, spell dog backwards, it completely calms them down.
That's interesting. Jane, may I make a quick comment?
Absolutely.
This is Mary Beth. I know that in our area of Fresno, for those who are interested, we have a specific group of people who work with the cab drivers, and many of them are Muslim. And I'm sure that the board would love to be able to know about places that provide such kinds of training with the dogs and stuff like that, and for transportation. And so I'm sure maybe even our group would be willing to talk to other areas about how they go about doing that training. But I think that would be good information for our state guide dog board to also have, because I feel like that could be an added asset for access for all of our guide dogs across California.
You know, you're right. The guide dog board could serve in so many capacities to assist the handlers, you know, whether it's a clearinghouse for where you can get information. But, you know, we're isolated. We don't know what you're doing. We don't know what your problems are. We get very few calls. I had a man call the other day. He had gone to Guide Dog Users, Inc. with a complaint, and he didn't even know that he had a guide dog board in California. And that's, you know, if he doesn't, most people probably don't. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening to me rant about the guide dog board and how we need your help. And like I said, please call, please write.
Thank you so much, Jane. You're going to be a hard act to follow. It sounds like the board has really taken some huge steps forward since you've been there. I can't believe it's been 2 years, for one thing. Holy moly. I mean, it really, you know, seems like a year, maybe. But we're sorry you're leaving, but we know you're always going to be in the field in some aspect or other. I remember hearing her speak on the genetics, the thing tracing the ancestry from the wolf to the domestic dog, and it was one of the most fascinating talks I've ever heard. It was great. So we know how much knowledge and what an incredible background Jane does come from. So whatever she does, we know it's going to be a huge contribution to dogs and to those of us who love them. And I just think we really got to give Jane a huge round of applause for coming to us.
Good job.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
And so that'll conclude this morning's program.
It's this whole room.
Okay, folks, we want to get started now. It's about 12:15, and we have till 1 o'clock to do our program. So I want to welcome everyone to the 2007 Fall GDUC Luncheon Program. And we have some great things to do here, and delicious salad, and I'm sure a lot of other good things. So I want to see if we can start with introductions. Going around the tables, everyone introduce themselves, their dog, the name of their dog, and what school, and how long they've had them, and whatever. So, do we have some mic runners here?
Right.
Okay.
Wolf.
Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Perry. Oh, well, we're starting to get this. All right. Let me put down my salad here. This is Jerry Arakawa, your GDUC vice president. Welcome.
And your dog.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot my dog. She's freaking out. I have a new dog named Tova. T-O-V-A, a very small reddish-yellow lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind from Boring, Oregon. A little bit over 2.5 years old.
Hi, my name is Pat Whitehead. I'm supporting Guide Dog Users of California, and I'm the Los Angeles Southwest Guide Dog Raisers puppy leader. We're glad to be here. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Pam Metz, and I'm sorry, you guys, if you have a hard time hearing me. I have a new female black lab. Her name is Maiden. I've had her since June. She is a reissue, so she's 3 and a half. And I've heard all the jokes. And Nora did call me this morning and wanted me to let you guys know that Delancey is having a ball, and she is now officially a therapy dog.
Pat LaFrance Wolf with my black Labrador guide dog Shannon, 8 and a half years old, from Guide Dogs of America.
Hello, I'm Nellie Emerson, and I'm here with Wicker, my 4-year-old German Shepherd from Seeing Eye.
Yoo-hoo. I'm Donna Brown. I'm from Redlands, and I'm here with my yellow lab guide from Guide Dogs for the Blind, Eureka.
Yoo-hoo. Walt Hedinger from Redlands, California, and I'm here with my guide dog, Freddie, from Guiding Eyes for the Blind, who is 9 years, or will be 9 years old in January.
Jesse Lorenz with 3-year-old Nacho from Seeing Eye.
I'm Teresa Stockton. I'm here with Oceana. We call her OC from the Seeing Eye.
Oops. My name is Mark Stockton. I'm transportation.
Oh, and husband.
Bill Gillespie. I'm here with my 5-year-old yellow lab that turned 5 on the 22nd of this month. And next month, November 14th, it will be 3 years since I received Garrett, and it has been a blast since I've had him.
Hi, I'm Loretta Patron, and my guide dog's name is Valor, and Valor is a little bit over 2 and a half from GDA.
Okay. Hi, my name is Adele Moeller. I'm from Fremont. And I have my 2-and-a-half-year-old guide with me, Aloha. She's a Golden Cross, and she's from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Sandra Burmester, and currently I reside in Hiroshima, Japan, and I just came back to train with a new dog. I've had for 2 months. Her name is Alate.
Can you trade one of these over there for the noodles?
Hi, this is Stephanie Rude. I'm a roommate coming in to join you guys.
My name is Lynn Coates, and I have guide dog Vista, who is 11 years old, and he's from GDA.
This is Jerry Wilson from San Diego. I don't have a guide dog, but I have two crutches I call Tank and Tank.
My name is Alice Knapp. My name is Allison Andrews from San Diego, and I have a female yellow lab named Maggie, and she'll be 5 next month, and I've had her 3 years, and she's from GDB.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Mary Beth Randall, and I'm here with my third guide, Tennyson. He is a male yellow lab, and we just graduated as a team on the 6th of October.
Hello, this is Cindy Fleurman. I have Pedro from the Seeing Eye. He's 4. He was a breeder. I got him in April. He's a yellow lab.
Hello, my name is Lee Morton, and I have Elaine. She is a female black lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind. We've been a team for 8 and a half years, and she turned 10 on June 24th. And although she's an old lady, she still would like to be the first Labrador to win the Iditarod.
Yoo-hoo!
Hello.
I'm Abby Vincent, and I have a guide dog, Wiki, from Guide Dogs for the Blind, but she's retired as of 2 months ago because of seizures and the medication. So my next dog is still a gleam in my eye.
Aww.
My name is Brenda Osborne, and I have Julie. And she is 10 and a half, and she is my 5th dog, and I'm in the process of waiting for my 6th dog.
Hello, my name is Monique McCorley from San Diego Chapter, and I don't have a guide dog, but I have a cane.
White stick.
Hi, my name is Don Brown from Richmond, California. I have a 5-year-old black lab, 80 pounds, Rex from GDA.
I'm Sarah Anir, and I'm a guest here today.
No cane.
Yeah, hi, I'm Brian Connors, and I'm here with Smokey, who is from San Rafael, Guide Dogs for the Blind, and he's black lab and just turned 4 on Monday.
That's right. He's younger. Hi, my name is Joni Patchy, and I'm here with Fleur, and Fleur is 4.5. She's a golden retriever from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
I'm Paul Patchy, and I have a white cane, but I was going to say I have a dog named Vanish, but it's not here.
My name is Alice Chavez, and I have a yellow lab, Avalon, from San Rafael. She'll be 8 next month.
Okay. My name is Jeff Tom, and my cane steadfastly refuses to take any name.
Oh, I have my mouthful. This is Andy Crusoe, GDA.
Jane Brackman, State Guide Dog Board.
Bob Windler, and I better be careful and read my notes here and make sure I get the right school. Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Keith Tomlinson, Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Hi, I'm Teresa Duncan. I'm the Alumni Association Director at Guide Dogs with my guide dog, Dario.
Hi, I'm Becky Barnes from Guiding Eyes for the Blind and also from GDUI, and I bring greetings from Guide Dog Users of New York as well. And I'm here with my second guide dog, a male black lab named Flyer, who will be 7 in December.
I'm getting a warning finger pointed at me by Bob Windler. This is Chuck Jordan, and I too have to be careful on which school I represented and which service dog area I represented. But Chuck Jordan from Guide Dogs of America.
Hi, I'm Debbie Turner, and I was invited by Lennon Guide Dog to be here today.
Hello, I'm Robert Bracey with Guide Dog Lennon from Gene. I've had him 2.5 years, and he's a great dog.
Hello, my name is Belinda Zellickson, and I have a female golden retriever who's, she'll be 9 years old December, and she's from GDB, and I guess that's it, but I just wanted to say, her name is Valley, she's a Valley girl, and today's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I'm Donna Lewis from Long Beach with the Guide Dog Rhyme, from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Thank you. I'm Rochelle Goldman, Greater Long Beach. I have a, black lab named Worley. We've been together almost 3 years, and he's from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
I'm Aisha Wendt, and I have a male golden lab cross named Toro, oversized, 27 inches at the hip. he came from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and we have been together for 2 years.
Hi, my name is Rosario. I'm invited by Lennon and Robert Bracey.
Anybody that I didn't get? I'm Perry Wolf and my white stick.
I'm Ann Kaiser, president of Guide Dog Users of California. And I'm here with my female black lab, Daytona. She's my 4th dog from GDB San Rafael campus. And we've been together now 3 years, so... let's let everybody have a couple of minutes to eat some lunch, and I'm going to turn the program over to my vice president, Mr. Jerry Arakawa. So sit back, have a few bites, and we'll get back to about 5 minutes or so. Thanks.
We'll begin the program now, and what before we and the first, we have a quick announcement from LA Southwest Puppy Raiser, since they're here.
Hi, it's Pat again. I just wanted to say we're really glad to be here. And as puppy raisers, it's so neat for us to see a number of things in how you are with the dogs. I mean, you're what we're all about. We love seeing you reach down and pet your dog and be sweet with your dog. And we also love seeing that you still make the dog toe the line when they need to do that. So from puppy raisers everywhere, because I represent puppy raisers everywhere, Terry Barrett from Guide Dogs for the Blind talked about going into a puppy puppy raiser's home in Korea, and it was just the same thing as it is here. We're all a little nuts about our pups, and we love them. And David Hudson, whose wife Melissa has Anya as a guide, just recently graduated Martine. And David said about Martine and his relationship with her, he said he sort of thinks of Martine is his pup, but she's really Marta, who is the person's, it's Marta's dog. So when we have them, we foster them, we love them, and we hug them, and we know you do the same thing. And I just want to say thank you very, very much for keeping that kind of care for your dogs. We have a little something that we're going to give each of you because you can never have not enough of the collapsible water bowls. And so I have two of my helpers, Karen and Becca, are here today, and they're going to pass one to each person with a dog. So we have a lot of you today, and they'll come around to the tables. Thank you so much. We love you all.
There you go.
You know, that is not every, or you know how important volunteers are to every organization like this. And I don't know of any organization who's been so blessed to have a dedicated core of people to help them, to help
Quiet,
us.
Please.
I don't know anyone any organization who's so fortunate to have an organization like LA Southwest Puppy Raisers. They've always been here to help us with the booth, with guide dog relief, with raffle, ticket running, with microphone running, with guide. Any task is not too large, too difficult for them. Again, let's give them a great hand. Thank you so much. Today we have an update from all the schools, but before we do that, I wanted to have Jane Brackman come up and provide some information for us. She was going to give us her email, website information, whatever pertinent information she has. Those of you who missed the morning program, boy, you can really tell the academician in somebody, because she gave one of the most outstanding programs in terms of what the state guide dog board does. She gave some great statistical information about California and the importance of California, not only as a standard bearer of guide dog for guide dog users and regulations, and make sure that the schools are continuing to provide the high standards that we've come to know in guide dog training. So we're very fortunate to have the State Guide Dog Board here, and for Jane to give us this, the information. Sadly, Jane may tell you a little bit more. She told us this morning that she's leaving State Guide Dog Board in March, and she'll be greatly missed. I don't know who's going to follow her with all the expertise she has, but on the other hand, we know that she'll continue to be in this field. She's an indispensable font of information for all of us. So here's Jane Brackman.
Thank you, Jerry. This morning I had was recruiting the people in the audience to please respond and write to us and get involved, and I couldn't remember what our website was. So that's what Jerry asked me to give you. We're at www.dca.ca.gov/guide dog board. dca.ca.gov/guide dog board. All one word. And if you want to email me personally, I'm at jane_brackman@dca.ca.gov, and I'll repeat that. It's jane_brackman@dca.ca.gov. And when you go to our website, you'll see it'll just say contact us, and then you can link right to our email. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane. Okay, we're gonna have, as I said, an update from the schools, and I want to give the schools ample time to talk about their programs and what they've been doing in the last year. But before I do, and I want to make a quick announcement and encourage all of you to go to the Guide Dog our GDUC booth. We have great things, exhibits there, things for you to buy. We have several different. We have a T-shirt with a pocket, a newly designed T-shirt.
with our GDUC logo and In Dog We Trust on the back. And some are wearing the T-shirt today, and we also have mugs that say GDUC on the mug. They're nice insulated 16-ounce mugs. The mugs are $6. The T-shirt is $10. And if you buy them both together, it's $15. We're also sharing the booth with LA Southwest Puppy Raisers, and they have a variety of Nyla bones that they're selling as well. So please, please support the booth and participate and buy as much as you can. A quick MC prerogative that I wanted to tell you, and I'm glad I'm sitting up here because I can do this. Some of you may remember Arlington, my rocket disguised as a guide dog. I retired him, and on behalf of all first-time guide dog users, I know how tough it is to get rid of your first dog. So, my feelings to all of you. It was a rough one. But he's in Columbus, Ohio with my sister, and he's going to be living there, and she's going to make him into a therapy dog. So I hope he doesn't drag some poor person in a wheelchair down the hall screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
Also, at our booth, Mary Beth reminds me to buy our 50-50 raffle. We are going to, we're there $1 a piece or 6 for $5. We'll announce the winner at the banquet, and we'll have names and phone numbers on the ticket. I think the LA Southwest Puppy Raiser will take down your name and number, but the winner will be announced at the banquet. And we also have membership forms for you to fill out. We are continuing to encourage membership. Next year is where it's dues paying time now. So the dues are $20, and we encourage you to sign up and pay up at the booth, and you'll be paid up for next year. And with that, you will join GDUC, GDUI, and you'll get all the magazines that both organizations send out. That is Forward for GDUC and Pawtrax for GDUI. Yeah, we also I'm reminded we have we include in the membership packet an envelope so you can take it home and fill out the forms and send it back to us. Okay, with that said, we're really fortunate. We have four schools represented here today, and we have Guiding Eyes. We have Guide Dogs of the Blind, Guide Dogs of America, and Guide Dogs of the Desert. So, and by the way, it's great to see so many Seeing Eye grads here. We love to have those folks here, and we want to see more of a presence from the Seeing Eye as well. Okay, and first, if Becky's ready, we'd like to call up Becky Barnes to talk about Guiding Eyes.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be in Southern California, and that's one of the darkest chocolate cakes I've ever seen. And it's waiting for me to finish. So, Guiding Eyes for the Blind is in Yorktown Heights, which is about 40 miles north west of Manhattan. And we've been there since 1954. We have four basic ways that you can get a guide dog from us. We have our residential program for first-timers, which is 26 days. For retrains, which is 19 days. We have a home and away type of a program. We call it ACTION. We were desperate for an acronym, so we came up with Accelerated Client Option. And that's what you come in for 10 days and work with a senior staff person at a faster pace than the rest of the class, and then you go home and finish your training at home with a senior instructor for 5 days. And then we also have a home training program primarily for people who have had guide dogs before, but not exclusively. We'll look at every situation individually. Guiding Eyes also has a special needs program that trains individuals who are blind and have additional challenges such as deafness, balance issues, and a number of other types of disabilities. And that program, the dogs are specifically trained for the applicants, so the waiting list for that one is a little bit longer. We just finished a major construction project that resulted in single rooms for all of our students and new office space for some of our staff, like me. I was working in a closet, actually. So, and now I have an office, and it's like right across from the restrooms, and it's great. Life is good. We generally graduate 160 to 170 teams a year. And our class size, our instructor-student ratio is 4 students to an instructor. And you work with the same instructor all the way through class now. So we can pretty much customize the training to your needs and to your roots at home and all of that kind of thing. We do provide $150 per graduate for veterinary care after graduation. And if you are good and fill out your health and work report before July 1st, you get an additional $50. We have a follow-up program. We intend to try to see each graduate once every 18 months. We're in the process of building that program right now. For those of you who our graduates of Guide Dogs for the Blind, your Michelle Pouliot is going to actually be doing 2 days of training with our instructors on clicker training for graduates, for students and graduates, and we're very excited about that. And I have an exhibit table out in the hall, and if I haven't answered your questions, then come see me. And even if I have, come see me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Becky. We'll have all four presenters come up and then maybe have questions as time permits afterwards. So again, in no particular order, but taking MC prerogative, I think we'll have up next an old friend who's been away from us for way too long, and I certainly want to welcome him back to the guide dog world, and that's Chuck Jordan from GDA.
Well, I have good news and I have bad news. Well, let's give you the good news first. Let's go the appropriate way. The good news is I'm back. The bad news is I'm back. I think the last time I addressed GDUC was here, or not necessarily this hotel, but this conference about 6 years ago. I left and gone up to CCI, which was a very, very good experience, very educational experience. But as you know, from the very get-go, I missed this particular work. I missed the people. I missed the students. I missed the dogs. I missed being involved. At CCI, I was more of an administrator. And the longer I was there, the more the job became administration, and less students, less trainers, less dogs. And so when the opportunity presented itself at GDA, I was really, really happy to come back into the field and get back down here with all the staff that I know, the people I know, the dogs I know, the work I know, and the constituent group of people that I've served close to. Well, January will be my 40th anniversary, so that tells you how long I've been doing this. But anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about GDA. GDA this last year, as everyone's probably aware, has gone through some ups and downs, as all schools will go through ups and downs. We've lost some staff. Some of them are here today. But change can be good. I know I think it's good for my colleague that you'll be hearing from later. The change was good to me to come back. Hopefully my coming back to GDA will be good for GDA in some respect, because you know, it's nice to get not necessarily new ideas, but fresh approaches to old ideas back into the fold. GDA has been successful this year. They've had two regular classes. We did have to cancel the October class because of staff changes and not compromising what we were putting out by having, you know, a shortened staff have to do double duty and putting dogs that were not ready out. We made a conscious decision to go ahead and cancel that class. We're going to make up a little bit because we've had one retrain class as well, a two-week course, and we're going to have another retraining course before this year is over, a course of four. And so we're now going to hit our total goal. Our goal annually is around 50. GDA has never been one that's going to grow large. We are trying to accommodate the people that want to meet, you know, have dogs the way that we train them, the way we place them, the individual attention. Our maximum class size is four.
and, you know, where you have private rooms, you know, follow up, you know, the normal stuff that most of the schools do, but we want to kind of specialize and make sure that we're giving the individual attention that we feel that people need, as we want to approach doing it. So I think GDA is healthy. We have some young apprentices that are in the fold now. We're going to try to add a couple more this next year. We've got two people that hopefully will pass the test coming up this February, so we'll have a couple of more licensed on staff. But things are healthy. They're moving forward. I just feel blessed to be back where Steve Berkman is still with us. Steve has kind of transitioned over into doing more field service, graduate services. It's an area that he loves and wants to be on. You know, he can be on the road a little bit more and kind of take some of the heat and pressure off from having to deal with all the administrative headaches. And so things are healthy. Of course, Andy's back with us. She was off a little bit this last year. You know, but she's yeah, the other good news is she's back. Everybody applauds that. So things are going quite well. It was nice to see some of my old friends here because there are many of you that I've known at other schools. When I was at Guide Dogs for the Blind for a number of years, it's good to see some staff like Keith that I've known. Becky, of course, I've known at GEB. And so it's just really, really good to be back and be back in the fold and move forward. So that's it for me. We'll be open for questions later on.
We're glad you're back.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Well, in this political season, we've heard a lot about equal time. So I guess in the interest of equal time, we're going to have Bob Wendler come up and talk about the exciting programs at Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome, everybody. This is exciting, and I too personally wanted to tell Chuck how happy I am to have him back in this field. He was sorely missed. Chuck, welcome home.
Thank you.
I feel a little bit like Kenny Lofton, and I'm going to tell you why. Do you guys know who Kenny Lofton is?
Yeah.
He's a great baseball player, but he's been traded so many times to so many teams. But the bottom line is Kenny's got it right now because he's playing in the World Series. I feel that I've got it right this time, and I plan on ending my career at Guide Dogs of the Desert. So, at this time, I'm the director of canine operations. I went on board as the director of training, and I moved up to canine operations. And what that means for me is that I'm in charge of everything that takes place at that school as far as dogs and training goes. And then I'm so happy to say that because that's where my love is being able to work with you guys. So I feel like I'm at the World Series right now, and I'm very excited to say that I think we got a good shot at winning this one. Many new and exciting things have taken shape at Guide Dogs of the Desert. We have several new class members, including myself. Some of you may know the names Trina Bagan. Trina's been a licensed instructor been working in the field for 20 years. And I was lucky enough to have Trina approach us, and she is heading up our breeding and puppy department. She's also brought with her another licensed instructor, Lori Miller. And Lori's been involved in the field for over 9 years. She's had a license for 9 years. Both of these ladies have been out of the guide dog field, yet have kept their license current and kept their interest in. But they've experienced some breeding and private training, and they're going to use the experience they have as licensed instructors, the experience that they have in working with puppy raisers in the past, and the experience they have with breeding to completely revamp the breeding department for Guide Dogs of the Desert. Trina and Laurie are actively and literally rewriting the book on breeding and puppy departments. They are actively rewriting and doing some videos because we honestly feel, as do most schools, that if we can educate our puppy raisers through the experience of licensed instructors, it's going to make things easier, not only for the puppy raisers, but for the puppies themselves, for the trainers when they come back in for training, and ultimately for you guys. So having that experience is just something that's so huge, and I'm so grateful for at this particular time. So at this particular time, I have three licensed instructors that are full-time employees. We have one contract licensed instructor that was director of training at Guide Dogs of the Desert for a short period of time. She has a successful business going on presently, but I am able to draw on her experience as well not only are Lori and Trina involved with the puppy raising and the breeding departments, but I'm able to call on their expertise to go out and help our graduates in the field. We've just recently sent out a letter to all of our graduates letting them know that we're up and running. As Chuck mentioned, guide dog schools have their ups and downs. And let's face it, guide dogs of the desert has just gone through a drought. And we're in the process of rewatering and regrowing that program, and that's something I'm very happy to be part of. Again, we have that one licensed instructor. I have two apprentices that are in their third year of apprenticeship, and I am very, very confident that in July, both of them will pass their state exam. That'll give us 6 licensed instructors at Guide Dogs of the Desert. I have an application that's been put in from a gentleman from England. He's a 20-year licensed instructor, a master instructor in England. He's an in-home specialist, and if we get his visa taken care of, I hope to have him on board by the end of the year. And he's going to help us out with our in-home placements, as that's where he's specialized for the last 18 years. So that being said, if he gets his license next year, Guide Dogs of the Desert is going to have 7 licensed instructors on staff. Our short-term plan is to continue with the smaller classes until our dog supply grows to something that we're going to be happy with. At that time, we're going to expand our classes to a whopping 6 students per class. And that's 6 students, and you're going to have 2 instructors in that class and myself, because until I feel comfortable with the people that are on board there, I'm going to supervise classes. Again, that's where my heart is, and I want to make sure that the instructors at Guide Dogs of the Desert have an understanding as to why all of us do this work, and I want to share that experience with them. No more than 6 students per class, like I said, and I'm going to be supervising the classes. Once things get to where we want them, we're hoping to hold 4 classes a year at the school, as well as continuing doing in-home placements for those that need it. We have to have the dog supplied in order to do that. But if everything goes right, and I'm feeling very comfortable it will, our goal is to graduate 30 students a year. That's going to include 4 classes a year, our in-homes, and the possibility of doing a retrain class in the Los Angeles area. We're soon going to have a nice location in downtown Palm Springs. We've already purchased the building. It's in the phases of being remodeled right now, and this is going to be a lounge for our students and a place for us to reach out to the Palm Springs residents. We're going to have puppy petting going on and things like that so that we can educate the snowbirds that come to Palm Springs and bring their checkbooks. But the best thing about this particular location is it's right across the street from Starbucks.
There you go.
You can't go wrong there. Presently, our dorm holds 6 students at a time. We have single-person rooms, in-room phones. We have a small computer lab that's equipped with JAWS and ZoomText. The class is designed to be flexible with our students, offering training in your home area if you live close enough to the school during the last week of training. If you're close enough, we'll take you to the home area and do some training in your home area. I think probably one of the most unique things that Guide Dogs of the Desert does offer is a plane trip during the last week of training. We fly to Phoenix, we go to Ontario Airport, go through security, board a plane, give you the opportunity of practicing going through that security. We fly to Phoenix, they put us up in a nice hotel, gives you an opportunity to practice working in a hotel. The hotels are just a great group of people. You get to fly back the following day. We go out to dinner with puppy raisers and graduates in that area. So you get 2 plane flights, and I think that's something real practical. Years past, we used to go to Disneyland. Yay. Might have been fun for you guys. Wasn't so much fun for the trainers. Because I used to have to hold 6 dogs while you rode Magic Mountain. Wasn't a lot of fun for me. But, you know, the bottom line is it wasn't something real practical. Going through security, flying on a plane is practical. Staying in a hotel is practical. So that you've got your instructors there with you. During the third week of training, we also take a trip on Metrolink down to Los Angeles, work the subway system, do our platform work down there. What breeds are we using? Labs. Just like all schools, our mainstay is still the Labrador Retriever. We are continuing to look for good Golden Retriever stock, and we will continue to look for dogs that we feel are suitable. We are still continuing, and we just purchased several standard poodles. We're going to continue with our poodles. We're going to continue crossbreeding the Labradoodles. We've had some success with those, so if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's an old dog trainer term. and we're going to stick to it. But we have had some success. We're also crossbreeding the Labs and the Goldens. As a matter of fact, I have four of them here today. And the only reason they're not in here with you guys is I have a class in session right now, and I have four siblings, Golden Retriever, Yellow Lab Crosses, that are in the dining room right now. And the reason I didn't bring them in is they got their dogs on Wednesday. It's a little early. It's a little early, but I do have four students that are here, and they're doing well. But I'm real happy with the crosses, the Golden Yellow Lab crosses. And we're also looking into reintroducing the German Shepherd breed to our stock. So all I can say is that I'm real happy to be part of the program. We're definitely on the road to change and recovery, and it's my dream to make this a place that students want to come to because they want that small school attention. You know, as I said before, I'm very excited about what the future holds, not only for Guide Dogs of the Desert, but to be honest, I'm happy with what the future holds for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wow, it's great. Okay. You know, it seems to be every convention we seem to have like 100 employees from Guide Dogs of the Blind. Glad to see that as a grad. I always feel like Keith or somebody's watching how I'm doing with the guide dog. And I'm always waiting for someone to grab me by the neck and say, loose leash. So with that, I'm not sure which one of the 100 people from Guide Dogs for the Blind is going to do the update, but...
Bob or I can do it.
Chuck Jordan wants to do it, but luckily we got Keith Tomlinson here.
Well, it is great to be here with everybody. I always enjoy this, to get to see so many people, and to get to visit with Bob and Chuck and all of you. It's just great to be here. So there have been some changes at Guide Dogs, and some of you are probably familiar with this. Guide Dogs for the Blind is in San Rafael, California, and also a campus near Portland, Oregon. Boring Oregon, yes. Probably one of the biggest changes for us in this past year has been a new CEO. Our new CEO is Nancy Gardner, and she was previously the executive director at the North Bay Regional Center in the Bay Area. So she just came on board as of October. And I have not met her yet, but I've heard some very good things. The other major change is Sigrid Button, who is the executive director now at the Boring campus. And she was previously an administrator with KCI Institute. So actually, I was in Solana Beach visiting one of our grads on follow-up. And she goes, oh, I know Sigrid. She grew up across the street. So this lady knew her as a little girl. But it was a very, very positive endorsement from one of our active graduates. So a young lady that grew up with dogs, I haven't met her either, but I've heard, again, some very positive things about her role there in Oregon. One of the biggest changes, I think, for the training has been the new harness. And Teresa Duncan is here with me today. She's our director of alumni. And she's at the guide dog booth, which is directly outside this door after the meeting. But she has one of the new Swiss harnesses. I think some of the key features are that it's lighter in weight. It has a very, it's a different style detachable handle that has a button at the end of each, at the harness that you can actually take the handle off. So when you're on a plane or a cab ride or something, just have to remember to take it with you when you get out of the access van, right? So, all right, Aisha. So the harness is a new design, and it's been very popular. And again, if you want to check it out, Teresa has one here with her new guide dog, and you can check that out at the booth. The other major class innovation has been they now have all the lectures on CDs, so that early in class or sometimes before you come to class, they send you the CDs so you can listen to them. And rather than having the hour-long lectures and so forth, you would come into the meeting and everybody has already listened to the lecture, and you would simply discuss dog food or bus travel or whatever the topic is. So it makes it, the focus is to try and kind of make it more of an adult learning situation rather than just being talked to. It's more of a discussion at this point. There's also been a lot of work in the past year as far as different adult learning styles, and that different people learn different ways. Some learn by, you know, maybe they listen to it on the CD. Maybe they learn better by actually getting out and doing it. But they're really focused more now on each individual learning style. The clicker training is kind of is an extension of the food reward that was used, started a couple of years ago, formally. I'm sure many people have used food for a long time just to get the dogs to come or do certain things. The clicker training is very specific, though, in that it can be excellent in putting the dog in a mode of understanding that when you say, you know, find the button or find the pole for the push button, and then you click and treat them, the dog learns very quickly, is right back in a mode that the clicker is a learning situation, that you're trying to find something that there's a and the reason to learn is what every lab wants is that kibble of food, right? So there's a very specific protocol for all that, and when you give the dog the food and so forth. But the clicker training is very powerful. I use it a lot with even private obedience classes with novices, and it's amazing. Once the dog understands the click and treat and is used appropriately, it can be very powerful for teaching a particular target, find a seat or find a button or so forth. It's not really the sort of thing where you'd say, let's go to the drugstore and then click the dog when you're at the drugstore. The dog doesn't really have that kind, it's not that kind of a spin. Well, I say that because some people have thought they could just click a destination. You could click a door, you know, if it's a particular place you wanted to go. But as Becky mentioned, this is not only at our school, it's pretty much, I'd say many of the schools are using it, are using, you know, the treat aspect now, which for many years was not used at all. But very powerful training, and it's something that they've introduced into all the classes that we do now at Guide Dogs. So the last thing, and Teresa wanted me to be sure to mention this, we had a very successful alumni reunion in San Francisco, and they're in the works of planning another one. There's a number of, I think there's 10 alumni chapters now, and there's one here in L.A. that recently started. There's one in San Diego, and Oklahoma City, Florida, Chicago, Sacramento, Toronto. And there's a chapter for graduates who like to cruise. I think that's cruise ships. It just says cruise, but and
maybe
it is cruise. And a chapter for guide dog handlers that have additional disabilities. So they're in the event of planning another alumni reunion scheduled to take place in Portland, Oregon next fall. So Teresa will certainly be in touch with all of our grads about that through the alumni news and so forth. Again, it's great to be here with you, and I hope you all have a great conference. Thanks.
You know, I hear these updates all the time, and I have the same reaction after I hear the latest updates from the school, and that is, aren't we fortunate to live in California, to have such great schools and such great trainers? Let's give everyone a great hand.
Oh, you mean harness from Guide Dogs? I would think that you would need to have a dog from Guide Dogs for the blind because it's stamped on the harness. My understanding was that harnesses were about $350 if you wanted to purchase it. And that's because that's about our cost to get them from Switzerland and all the components that are on there. So I don't know that it would be available for somebody that was not a graduate of Guide Dogs, but if you are a graduate of, you know, Guide Dogs, you can put in a request to purchase it. I know at this point that the supply was, you know, just pretty much for class, and that. But that's okay. And Donna had another.
Question for Bob.
Yes.
Do you conduct any of your workouts and trainings in Redlands? I know there's. I live in Redlands, and there's a lot.
We do.
Because we have some challenging street crossings there.
Yeah, you do. There's a lot of, especially right in the downtown area, if that's what you're talking about. Yeah, the curbs are extremely flat for anybody that hasn't worked down there. It's similar to areas, I think, that all those schools try to find some areas that are somewhat similar to that, with the down curbs actually extending out because they've changed the parking to be at an angle. Some of you might have been able to see these types of areas. So if you get out there, all of a sudden you feel like you're, you know, standing up there without any clothes on because all of a sudden you're out in the middle of an intersection and you feel, plus the curbs are real flat. So yeah, that is a difficult area to work in. It's something that we not only train with the dogs because it is a good challenge and it's something that the dogs should be taught, but we teach our class. As a matter of fact, class was working out of Smiley Park yesterday.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, we were there yesterday to get out of the smoke.
Okay, Keith tells me that Rochelle Goldman had, she'll be the last questioner. I think we have just one more anyway.
Keith, are
You're asking if I'm going to be around? Yes, I'm going to be here this afternoon.
Actually, he's gotten a lot rounder since I saw him last.
You're so subtle.
You must be in that cruising thing.
I know your meeting is going to continue on, you guys, but again, I'm in class right now, and I've got 4 brand new students here, so I'll excuse myself and see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, Bob. See ya.
Okay. Well, this... Hey, listen, again, thank all of you for coming. This is such a wonderful experience for all of us up here, and thank you. And we will see you guys in the spring in Sacramento, and visit the booth. See what you see some of the products up there. Until next spring, bye-bye.